working only upon invitation once the energy part of that gets discussed. They are currently developing the project plan, the integrated project plan, and the department is part of that integrated project plan. If we look at step 9, which is the fourth electricity step, or energy-related step, is to electricity generation to support socioeconomic development. As I said before, Eskom has just been appointed as the SIP coordinator. They will be discussing in October what actually goes to happen and when they will start their process. They currently, when this all started, the SIP 9, for instance, was more about the generation capacity, and at that stage our RPP project had not yet started. So we see from the department side that our RPPs and our RP future planning will definitely fall within the SIP. So we once again will definitely be a very integral part of SIP 9, but once again as an attendant and not as a coordinator. SIP 14, higher education infrastructure, also one of the SIPs that is more dealing with education and infrastructure, but as a part of energy in it. We will attend as we are required. They have not yet started their SIP meetings. There is, I'm just to point out, for instance, you'll see at on the slides, I refer to a SIP Coordinators Forum. The SIP Coordinators Forum sits monthly. They discuss any issues that needs to be reported to the DICC, tasking that needs to be taken up to MANCO, or any blockages that they are actually experiencing within their SIPs. We have requested, as the Department of Energy, although highly irregular, we have asked to be part of that SIP Coordinators Forum, and this request has been granted. I have attended one of them. The next one will be taking place on Friday, where I can actually sit and see if there is one of these energy SIPs or any of the other SIPs that actually need energy in, but we are not aware of it. So it makes us proactive in dealing with asking for attendance at the SIP meetings. SIP 17 is your regional integration for African cooperation and development. And then, of course, SIP 18 was only launched now in June. They've also not yet started their or finished their business plan. Once all of that started, because water and sanitation infrastructure master plan, we are involved in and will be attending those meetings as well. The following SIPs I'm referring to is purely observer status. We are not, energy is not involved in it at all. We only make sure that we are aware of minutes and any indication that the energy might be involved or that they might require policy input, but we don't attend any of the meetings, and we're not involved with any of the coordination. That will be SIP 11, which is agrologistics and rural infrastructure. Number 12, which is revitalization of public hospitals and other health facilities. Number 13, which is the National School Program. Number 15, which is expanding access to communication technology. And 16, which is SKA and MIRAT. When it comes to reporting, and I think this is also a slide.
Just before you move,
yes, sir,
to your breakneck speed. Unless I missed it, yeah, I don't see SIP 8 yet.
Yes, it was. On slide, yeah, this is 18 on slide 17.
Okay.
That's the way the business plan will be presented to the minister during next week.
Yeah, I was looking at page 21.
Oh, okay. What we've done is I've shown you the energy-related tips, the four.
Oh, okay.
And then I showed you the ones that the DOE is integrally involved in the sense of IGFG, and then I showed you the rest where we don't feature anywhere as a, we're actually just one of the participating departments.
Okay.
No. Okay.
Fine. Got it.
No problem. This reporting, what we currently do is before any of the departments or any of the coordinators were appointed, we reported directly to the PICT. Once they are appointed as a SIP coordinator, we report into the SIP coordinator. For instance, on IDC, SIP 8 specifically, we provide them, and I'm just giving an example, on the IPPs, which falls into SIP 8 as green energy because of the renewable energy, we take the information, we provide per project, department projects, solar water heaters, solar park, INEP, IPP to provide on each of these specific projects, we provide information into the BICC. They take this information and they collate it into a portfolio of programs. So they take all the projects within the green energy, and that's not necessarily just from the department. Although we are the lead on this, there are other departments that are involved in green energy. Transport, Department of Water Affairs, all of those departments. They pull all those programs together and they prepare this view and reporting structure to the PICC. So this is just purely explaining to you how they take the information as the coordinator and then report back into the PICC. Now I'll hand back to Dr. Bolnar for conclusion.
Sure, thanks. I hope that just gave some sort of overview of our involvement as Department of Energy, and I think you also noticed that of the 18 SIPs, 13 is Department of Energy involved in, and you can think for yourself Angelica referred to a couple of times meetings, and just looking at those different structures, you can think for yourself that our involvement as a department is intense in this, and it's why special people have to be appointed just look after this, and it's not close to addressing all of these coordination that needs to be done. And also it's a developing process, so process has still been developed. But personally, I think it's an excellent program to facilitate and to coordinate our infrastructure. As you can see, it's done holistically, breaking away from the silo developments that have been taking place up to now, where each department runs its own thing. Here's a coordination being done. And I think just to end off to say that from our side, we are really working a number of hours when Chair, you're looking for us and you're there to be in meetings. Just looking after this program is a daunting task on its own. But that being said, I think we, one of the departments, I think that have established ourselves as one that have quickly got in line with this program. And that's the end of the day, to get to the end of this program, and that's to make sure there's economic growth through various types of implementation. Chair, I hope that I gave a bit of an overview, and we'll take some questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bernard and Mama Kila. Although you move at a very fast speed, for some of us, it's slow fingers. That was quite helpful, but I wish you could have had a map that showed the geographical location of the SIPs. Although some, of course, would necessarily fit in that, particularly the one of 40,000 and the likes and the rural economy, if I can call it, rural infrastructure and agri-logistics. Yeah, some would be fitting into that, but a little bit of just to see, because as we move along, you know, it would be good to have a picture as to what kind of role are you going to be playing, unless I'm assuming incorrectly, but I'm sure in the Northern Cape you would be looking at promoting, you know, solar energy as much as possible in certain areas, even if it's beyond the areas that have been identified, and also the wind, and so forth. But having said that, I think it's time for members for clarity seeking questions. Snowbula, Honorable Khaling. Yes, Honorable Khaling.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and I mean, as you say, we are trying to get our heads around some of these issues here. I find it a very interesting model that's been employed here, and as you say, this kind of transversal management and trying to break out of the silo mentality. I'm just interested, the National Development or the National Planning Commission, are they not involved in this in any way? Because I don't see them on that organogram. I'm just interested to see that there, because, of course, you know, the issue with breaking out of silos is that what you can also get is contested approaches to some of these particular issues. Definitely, you know, if they're coming from different departments, they've got different ideas as to how these things should be done. And not only different departments, but also different spheres of government. So, for instance, a lot of this stuff, from what I can see, should essentially also be done at the local government level, and clearly isn't it being done. And so I'm just wondering how those kinds of tensions are managed in implementing some of these projects. And also whether, and we saw it in the case of the DBSA, is that, you know, some people might argue that these are unfunded mandates. How is the kind of money put aside for this? Do each of the departments have to then allocate specific budgets for each of these SIPs and each of the activities in there? What is the kind of financial mechanisms to unlock the kind of finances that are needed for these particular projects? I'll leave it at that for now. I'll come back to Alish.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just need some clarity on page 6. I didn't get it quite. Can you just clarify this map for me? And also the following one with the dots. The one with the dots. I didn't get it clearly. Yes, that one and the one before that one. And when we talk of the provinces where you said you are not participating. The SIP do you say that electricity DOE is not playing a role in SIP 4? Thank you.
I'm also interested in this map as well, because your circles, for example, the circle in the Eastern Cape and KZN exclude the area where I got down there. That's the border between the Mozambique and South Africa. Whereas I assume the dark brown means that the least resource place, so there's no electricity there. Now let's look at what you have indicated, just a few specifics. I must comment in any case, it's for the government. Spends that our minister is thrown into SIP 6 and is not part of SIP 8. It's very, very strange. It's not part of SIP 9, you're not SIP 8. Very strange arrangement. But that's government, it's their own baby. But in page, I think it's like 15 in fact, you make reference to expansion of electricity distribution grids, which is part of looking at these 24 list resource district municipalities. To what extent is that linked to ADAM? That's the first thing that triggered in my mind. Because I would assume those municipalities are even hit harder when it comes to infrastructure. Not even maintenance, but rehabilitation. I look at 6.6 as well. I know you're at still planning level, conceptualization levels. I'm quite attracted by the issue of revitalization of clinics and hospitals, which are obviously part of government properties, one way or another. Maybe before coming out openly, to what extent are you working with public works on that in terms of energy provision, or provision of electricity as part of revitalization. The context in terms of concepts is how to integrate electricity, energy efficiency in the revitalization, or do you just leave it open-ended? So Africa Post, it does have them nice, clean gem, free of gems, and it ends there with 24/7 provision of electricity. In slide 19, you make reference to development of green cities in towns like Lephalale. Very good thing, but I remember one time, I can't remember who this expert from CSIR, but he came with a very interesting concept around green cities in terms of making them once again energy efficient. Are you looking into that, or is there any different path that you engaged in that area? One has got also a specific interest, particularly in C5, on the gas development in Saldan. Of course, you locate it in Saldana only, but what figures in my mind is that in terms of gas infrastructure development, which other areas are you looking into? Because gas infrastructure is just one area which is a learning gap, a huge, huge gap. It only located to Saldana and other areas, or is it conceptualizing it? Once again, the ease of the CSI model of a green city in SIP 7 comes in. Of course, an emphasis from an energy perspective. That's all for now. We will just respond to it.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just for the SIP 13, National School Build Program, I heard that you said you were not participating there. What about electrifying the schools? Thank you.
And once again, Mamatubela, from an energy efficient perspective, or are we just doing things business as usual? Honorable Feli.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, just on that issue that you raised around the gas economy as well, I mean, it's a bit worrying to see the regional integration for African cooperation and development. I know that you're not intimately involved there, but, you know, I think one of the kind of gaping holes at the moment with regards to energy policy is around regional integration and developing regional energy policy. And I'm just wondering whether you're going to be involved in that and whether that would look at that particular aspect of energy policy, because I really think that we need to be identifying where we can get other energy sources in the region and how we go about building the infrastructure to then capitalize on it, if that's something that you're looking at. And then just the other issue with SIP 1, which is unlocking the Northern Mineral Belt with the Waterberg as the catalyst. You say here that DOE needs to send a letter to NERSA to support ESCOM committing to the associated water capacity, which is required for the energy portion related to the ILP. Now, there's a little bit of confusion here. It says the key decision to make in the next few months is another coal-fired power station. And you said MCWAP has been signed for two more coal-fired power stations. Now, the confusion that I have at the moment is that what seems to be contained within the ILP, there is 2,600 megawatts of coal, but that the determination seems to be for IPPs. Now, an announcement was made a few weeks ago that they're looking at a coal 3. Now, coal 3, to my mind, is probably the size of a Matupi or Kasile, which extends beyond what the IRP actually mentions, and it certainly seems to be built by ESCOM. What is the particular issue there? Because obviously developing this Waterberg area, we need to look at the water demands, we need to look at the water infrastructure according to what we are going to build there. So what is the particular plan with regards to that? Because the ILP doesn't seem to give a guidance on that. Are we waiting to update the ILP to see whether Coal 3 needs to be built, or what is the particular approach being taken towards these issues? Thanks.
Well, we handled that yesterday. Yeah, but don't ask them when Susnail is not around. I'm trying to protect you now because the deed is not around. Carry the can in high-end, high-level issues. Thanks. I just had a few other points to check, you know, I just wrote them. At what stage am I going to get the contents of the business plan? I mean, I don't say the whole 50 page of a business plan. That's the highlights, because it would be helpful to just have a sense on that. And there are a couple of other things that come into mind as we move along. At what stage will you be looking at? I mean, that's more or less part of the contents of the business plan, because as you are going through, you know, the briefing, this is that such as skills requirements come in, you know, is that just something that you look at separately, or is it going to be part of the business plans? Amongst others, you know, demand for electricity will come at different levels and rates in demand it. And are you going to be looking at encouraging co-generation and tri-generation, or once again, is it going to just be business as usual? Sorry, we can't keep those questions within ourselves. You know, we just have to express ourselves and see how, whether we are together with you in trying to grasp with the concept behind, you know, the various SIPs. And also, I think one of the things I scribbled here was, what's the level of progress? I think that was before you went through slide 25. In other words, are you saying that if one asked that question from time to time, we'd have to be looking at the slide 25 to be able to say, SIP 17, this is how I can give you level of progress. SIP 5, this is how I can give anyone a level of progress. Because we've got 18 SIPs, and out of the 18 SIPs, we've got 13 that we're involved in. And obviously, from time to time, we'll be keen to know, you know, how far have you progressed, you know, in making your contribution in each of the 13 SIPs, you know, what are the demands. Maybe you went a bit fast in slide 5, it's just to say, please take us through and articulate how will that be done. Because for those of us who will be back in the next term, obviously, this is going to be an iterative exercise that from time to time we'll be inviting the department and say, look, brief us as to how far are you, you know, in contributing to this. What one would expect from other committees as well, to say, National Treasury, brief us in terms of your facilitation of funding, you know, economic development, trade and industry and others, health, how far you're doing in your area, public work and stuff. But in this level, I think, although I just said level of progress, but what one was trying to say, how would we be able to grasp, because this is quite complex and quite involved. And your involvement as well, I think that's another thing, comes in different shapes and shades and characters, you know. One, you're like a prop for a front ranger in a back of four. In the other one, you're a scrum half. The other one, you're a full back. You know, you tend to be more peripheral. So I think my question was triggered by that as well. Maybe overall, where are we in terms of the whole, you know, SIP? You know, are we still very much at conceptual level or at the planning level? Or there's various levels of progress, you know. I mean, all we get is articles, you know, in newspapers, Sometimes it's just people making comments on specific areas, whereas we want to have a dashboard view at some stage as to how far is this whole thing, and of course vis-a-vis our role once again as energy. Quite a barrage of questions, but the floor is yours now.
Sure, thank you very much. I will deal with some of them, and then Jalik will deal with all the difficult ones. I think before I'm going to try to deal with the question, thanks. I think it is, for us, when we put together the presentation, I need to be honest, Chair, it was difficult to know to what level you need to go, because the request was to talk about energy systems, and we realized we try to do that, we're going to miss the holistic impact of the PICC. So, apologies for not, it's not that we want to withhold information, just you did want to also overflow with information. Just to give you an indication, right now, there are 645 projects being registered at PICC level. And it comes to the first comment in terms to have a graphical mapping of these. It can be done, it becomes very, very messy. So hence, when I was referring to these slides, the specific one that's on the screen now, there's a number we can do on energy, depending on what we want to look at. We look at gas, future gas planning, we can look at petroleum transport, gas fields, the electricity network, et cetera, et cetera. So all of that can be built on it, but it depends on what level you want to get to. But it can be done. And just please, and I think that's the second comment I want to make is, I started off by saying we as a department are just participating into it. We're not a lead. So PICC is the secretary, this entity on its own. Our information, for instance, we don't see what is being presented to PICC. It's documents that we don't have access to. So we feed information and we get instructions. So we don't know this sort of reporting dashboard that we showed you is something that we don't see. We don't have access to that. We know we feed into one block here and one block here, but more than that, that's not. So we just remember it's a program that covers vast government departments, also yes, from national to local, and then all different entities is also participating in it. So it's a huge a number of information that's been collided and put together by a coordinator and then feed it to PICC secretary. But I'm more than willing. I mean, we had the meeting yesterday, the day before, where they shared a lot of information. No, they're not sharing. It's just you need to ask them what I need to share with you. So I just want to also mention that we're not in charge of the overall process, fortunately or unfortunately. With respect to the specifics, Chair, you also made an introduction mention about Northern Cape, which focuses on solar. If you look to the different SIPs, it's more than solar. There's a rail network, there's gas networks, there's the grid infrastructure. That all is need to be upgraded somewhere in Northern Cape. A whole telecom integration that took place in Northern Cape because of the SKA and Mirka. So all of that is situated in different SIPs. So you can't just focus and say Northern Cape is only renewable energy. It's much more than that. That's currently being planned around Northern Cape. So we go through all the different areas in the country. That's just a general comment I want to make. On specific comments and questions, the first comment question was on the National Planning Commission involvement. I think when I started off, said that everything that's been said and what PICC is built on, is built on current policies and inputs from different structures. So the blueprint that has been developed by the NPC is the fundamental growth document that goes into this. So there's always reference to that, although it's not been a literary structure, but not so much on the policy input. So there's no doubt that it's part of the input to this, like a lot of other policies that is for the growth and stimulus of the economy. So there's no doubt about that it's part and parcel of this. What's important, I think, is the issue about the fact that we tend to work in silos at departments. I think that's what I try to make sure is integrated between all levels of government. The second question on funded expenses of these entities that's involved in the coordination of these projects and reference being made to DBSA, that is the decision is that all these entities need to look after themselves with respect to this. There is no additional funding for the management of it.
I'm not talking about the implementation budget, I'm talking about a management budget. In our case, we did ask for more funding for managing that. It's part of a new strategy that we have to just bear with and make sure that we deliver on that. The comment that I take per comment group from honourable members, gas and integration with the region energy policy, yes, that is exactly what SIP 17 is all about. It is about integrations. Africa is part and parcel of the African economical growth, and it's diverse. Energy is one component of the road network. The whole issue about water access, which is important to us for other purposes. So all of that is part and parcel of SIP 17. At this point in time, it's not been developed a business plan to even go down to say, develop a regional policies. It is more about projects, and that eventually will have the effect that policies of the region need to be coordinated. So it's not in the business plan, as I can remember, but it's more just rather looking at specific projects that can be integrated. The last comment was on SIP 1. And then the issue about Coal 3, I think, as you rightfully mentioned, we have discussed it yesterday. I think just to get clarity here, what did you talk about here, that there's a water shortage. Now, the issue was, and it's a typical example where PCC is filling an excellent role. So now to address the water shortage, the growth of the new cities, you have to develop a water infrastructure. Now, the question is, in developing that, you're going to need X million megawatt gigaliters of water be flowed through that network. Now, do you need to design it for cultural and domestic units, or do you need to design for potential future growth and energy needs? And that's exactly what this is all about. And just to also to mention that the issue about Coal 3 is not that this comes, as far as I know, was when I read what cabinet had decided. It's not to say Eskom is going to build it. Eskom has to do the pre-study. That's what they do. So that's a participation in this program. So doesn't know who's going to build it. It's going to build in 5 years' time or 50 years' time. To just plan at least for the water infrastructure to facilitate and be sufficient when that is going to be developed. So you're going to need to develop one other stage. And that's, I think, what's a beauty, and it's a good example on how this can unlock solid developments where water just design the network for domestic use and to give out others. And this is a typical example where we come together and we design this together. The next the question and the clarification, ma'am, on these maps. My apologies, I think, and you rightly made the correct comment, Chair, that we went very quickly through and also weary of time. This specific map is rather going to do that, take away the circles. You can, with the design of a map like this, you can test, you put into your formula a level of access. Now, what we're talking about here is I can't recall what is the level of access. Say, for instance, 70% of all households have access to electricity. And you just put that into your question, and then the map comes out and it's graded in different colors. So the darker, the less access there is to electricity. And everything above 70% is light colored. So it's just an indication that if you look to the country, there's certain areas that has huge backlogs that need to be locked. I mean, in the northern part of KZN, central parts of KZN, there's huge backlogs, also down the Eden Coast, coastal borderline. Also in northern, and the reason for that is lack of access transmission networks. And I can go into that also, but that's also what would be the systems PICC. For instance, there is some of these areas we can't get our networks to run through certain areas for various reasons. And that's why some of the areas are not accessible, because we can't get our networks there. And in some cases, we take so long. I made a comment, I think, last week at the NCB. If you want to have a land plan, just announce we want to build a network. Then you have land plan. So then you have to work through that. So it's, some of these are really problematic, specifically in case of the NCB, that challenge. But that's the question. The question is, the explanation, so I hope that explains that. With the next one, as I mentioned, if you just to give indication, if you take a type of economic development, such as your future mining development, how does that link in terms of your population migrations? Because that's important. And where access to certain services are lacking. So if you want to develop economically certain area, you need to have certain basic pillars, and those pillars are access to basic services. So we need to then focus and make sure those red areas where there's a lack of general services, they've been addressed intensively, and funds being channeled and projects being channeled on infrastructure development in those areas, because if they don't develop, you can't develop the economic offset you want to create. So that's just is a way of explaining some of that needs analysis. Now that explains that. I think the talk about provinces, if you take all 17, take number 17 out with the regional one, but the other 17 SIFs, if you put them all together, you will have that in each province there's some activities. So it's not a provincial plan. There's certain areas that need specific attention, and they've been highlighted. Yes, I think you could debate it, but it's just participating in the process. We didn't design the SIPs terms of reference, etc. We participate in supply information into it. I think on the SIP 4, Angelique, I don't know if you want to, you're going to deal with that one on the support issue. And then on SIP 13 with the schools, to deal with that. Now, I'm going to carry on and just quickly deal with the chair, some of your aspects. The SIP 6 versus SIP 9, again, it's addition by PICC. It's something that we also agreed, but it's a government process, as you said. That's the decision that's been taken in the cabinet. So the SIP 6 you reference to is Adam linked to. Yes, it's definitely, I think that's the beauty of it, that our minister is the lead in this one. It's definitely formed part of that, and we hope that can also assist us in general government environment to unlocking this huge challenge we're sitting in. The comment on clinics and hospitals and linking with public works, the energy provision of that, and are we the supply energy is just business as usual, as the chair said. Yes, I think that you can't deal with SIP 6 not taking cognizance of what is happening in SIP 8, which is the green economy, including energy efficiency. So all these are linked to each other. So it's not that it stands in a SIP silo also. I think it's a good coming to, but that's the beauty of this whole development, is that you're not going in there with only your hat, because somebody else is going to take that off your head to make sure that it's holistically what has been planned. The green cities, yes, I think that is exactly what is planned here, that we have to, new developments of cities need to do it much better, and that's why there's a specific reference being made on SIP 7 regarding that. The issue on the gas development on SIP 5, yes, Chair, SIP 3 also made reference to gas development in the East Coast. So it is just that these are regional SIPs, so it's not to say there's only one gas development. At the end of the day, it links also to what has been planned in SIP 3. Skills one, co-generation. I just want to get my issues around this one, Chair, sorry. And the comment on the content of the business plans and the approval of that by PIC. I think the first comment I want to make is that I think that it might be a good suggestion, Chair, if the committee can also invite the ICC Secretariat to come and give a view on this, which is going to be much broader than just from our perspective, from an energy perspective. But I think when we talk about skills development and all that, it remember these fundamental pillars that today, and I started off by saying it's localization, green economy, skills development, empowerment. These fundamental each project, each of that 645 projects, that's fundamental. It's built into the business plan. If it's not there, it's not going to fly. So it needs to form. The business plan is not only about the next one project. It's to make the business plan work built on those pillars. Can I ask you to deal with that, and then this level of progress, how it's been done. So, Chair, I think I'm going to ask Angelique to deal with some of the other four or five questions.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to SIP 4, where I think you asked, are we not involved or how are we playing a role? For instance, in SIP 4, which is the unlocking of the economic opportunities in the Northwest Province. The DOE is very involved in that SIP. But as Dr. Bonnard pointed out, the terms of reference, the projects identified, all of those things have been done by the PICC. So we as the department, we are also the department that will be involved in the various steps have been identified by the PICC. So for instance, I'm going to answer the two together, where you asked about the strategic project number 13, which is the National School Board Program. The department is not featured as a participating department in that SIP. And that's why I call it observer status, because I believe the same issue should be involved there. But because we are not part of it, the SIP coordinator will not invite us to meetings. That's why I've asked to be part of their SIP coordinator forum, where I can see the minute they start building out the school, we can talk about maybe they don't know about energy efficiency issues and projects. So that's why we've asked to sit there and just look and see where we can actually add value. We did have a meeting, as Dr. Barnes stated, on Mondays, asking specifically, what happens when, you know, for instance, on SIP 9, why are we not involved, et cetera. Once again, these decisions are taken in cabinet. It's taken at the PICC Manco. So all we get is the feedback downstairs. The way we report, for instance, on the projects, and that's what we must understand with the whole PICC, everything is the business as normal. The department still works on its projects. We still go ahead with solar water heaters. We still go ahead with INAP. We still go ahead with the solar park. The PICC is just there to actually coordinate these projects and make sure that departments work together and see a future or a longer-term view. So we don't actually have a lot of say in how things are getting done. We report on our projects where they see there is something that is where they can either help us with or that we are going opposing, for instance, a water affairs or water affairs is opposing us. Then we start working together and the SIP coordinators unblock that for us and take it to the PICC Manco. So all of these is where we provide input. And it comes back to the reporting where you ask where the status is. As you said, in some of these we provide information. We sit at observers. We're not supposed to be there. We beg, we plead, we ask nicely, and we smile nicely. But you are just there as the observer. In the others, even some of the ones where you provide policy and input, certain of the directions, and now there's also still always the, the departmental or the political influences that play a role in the sense of when you come to where the future is going with the projects. So the departments all sit there together, they try and share where everything is going, but it doesn't not always very clear at that moment. So as the project develops, we move along. Some of the steps are much further ahead than others. We will provide you with an update if that which you would require, which SIP is specifically where and what we provide with those. Most of them we, at the moment, are providing policy and input until they actually get off the ground. SIP 1 is much further ahead. They're actually busy integrating business plans or project plans from various departments. The other SIPs have not even arrived at project plans from various departments.
I don't know how to feel, how you feel on that. That would be helpful, but still very high-end. Because there's a risk you may get them brought. We're not project managers, so project coordinators, you know. Just to have a sense, you know, particularly the 13 SIPs, but also even the rest of the SIPs, where you feel you could have made a contribution, you know, just to say this is what we sense. I know you make inputs without necessarily getting the desired feedback, not even the outcome, feedback, which I think probably that's one of the things we need to exact if need be. Because, I mean, how come can you just make inputs without getting feedback? Because at the end of the day, how are you going to influence, you know, energy provisions in other areas? I mean, I'm emphatic on that because I don't think it's appropriate to just carry on and providing energy on the basis of business as usual, honorable members. I mean, we need to be innovative, you know. We can't be doing things on the fact that in a couple of years down the line, we'll be retrofitting. You know, a paradigm shift is essential right now, and to me, this infrastructure build
is an opportunity for that. So I'm sorry to chat in, but it's just that that the flavor one was sort of influencing. I know we're asking questions, but the first one would like to sense that you are visionaries in energy. You scan the whole 18, the steps, and one expects and assumes that you'll be scanning and sensing whether they are taking the correct direction in terms of giving you space in energy provision. And whether you are actually getting that speed or getting suffocated, because people can be excited, and get distracted from that daily business and get stifled into the six thing, as if it's something new, as you say. Sorry for taking you off. Carry on.
Thank you, Chair. And when it comes to reporting, as we said, with the high-level progress on each of the SIPs, we'll provide with that information. I can do a few now in the sense of very high-level, but most of it is already explained in the departmental contribution because some of them haven't been spotted at all, whatever. But what I'll actually do is tell you where each SIP is in, whether it's in a progress phase, etc. So I will get that information to the portfolio committee. When it comes to the reporting, what we currently report on, so we, for instance, are being asked, once again, not necessarily all our projects, for instance, on green energy, the PICs will instruct and say what they will report on or projects that they want information on will be solar park, RPPs, for instance. They will not ask on certain other projects, so sometimes you'll have to use your own discretion and say, well, solar water also needs to be in the green energy side, or solar PV. So you offer some information, but they don't always know of all the projects within the department, so it is the department's responsibility to make them aware of those. What we then give them is we give them where the project is, so the progress, the spend on the project, jobs created in a project, and the localization, if there's any local content or localization issues surrounding that specific project. That we report to them, they or to the IDC, for instance. The IDC then take that information and collates it. Now, this is also where we have asked the question on Monday, saying specifically, once information gets presented to the PRC LANCO, we don't have, first of all, we have no insight into what gets presented, and second of all, we don't get any feedback. So we have asked for feedback in that sense because it does get discussed with the minister's reasons at the MANCO. And they are expecting the ministers to provide us, as the departments, with feedback. But we all know the ministers are extremely busy, so sometimes we get the information 2-3 weeks later and we would really like it to be a shorter feedback time. So that is in progress where we are actually asking for meetings. Just for instance on our SIPs relevant, so that is in progress at the moment. I think that should answer all the outstanding ones.
I'm not sure what the honourable failing we find with funding mechanisms. It was not about funding internal operations, but it was funding the projects. But it's also linked to the level of development in each project. Are you getting a sense that that's rolling out as well? Is getting clear as to how we're going to do funding and things? Because also, I mean, one might as well look at the dream of the BRICS development that when are we going to tap from that one, are those the things that are beginning to shape up into the business plans or into the notes that you scribble on PowerPoint presentation, the African Development Bank, the European Development Bank, World Bank, this and that. Are those things, of course, not to overlook internal markets, financial markets for that matter. A little bit of just a sense of that. I think another point, which we would like to emphasize, one of the members, is one thing to talk about reporting and reporting back, but it's another thing to talk about information sharing. 18,654 projects, and very soon it can just zoom into 1,000, as things unfold. And when it comes to projects, then it's even more horrible, I talk of any kind of a portal, a common receptacle, whereby if I go into it and then punch energy, out would come all issues that are related to energy in the 654 projects. Because I think look, I'm asking a question, but I'm also thinking aloud. I think to me that's very important, because then it means you'll have good radar scanning, which would lead to some kind of an early warning system. That, hey, Baka Beach there, you don't seem to be, you know, creating space for us to ensure energy issues, you know, are affected properly. That's the same thing that could be done by any other department as well, you know, which is either directly involved or sort of indirect as a scrum half or as peripheral, right at the back, depending on the level and character of involvement. But I'm really provocative on the last one. See, to report is one thing. Right? You feed in, they report to the secretary, report to the council, that's fine. But surely, you're part of this whole government team, so there should be a feedback, which should come in different ways. And amongst others, is what I'm sort of practically, you know, referring to some kind of a portal, whereby the whole information is pulled together there, so that you can dip into it. Let alone, you may have, what if it flew just the morning before you went to a meeting and you missed out to that meeting? Whereas now, if there's a portal, you know, it means you can stay deep into it, and when you need to feedback within energy, team energy, you can be able to refer to the very meeting that you missed out, which might have been a very crucial meeting, maybe concluding a business plan. But it's more about information sharing. Because as these SIPs get, as the 654 projects just on their own get rolled out, the more complex are they going to be, more intense are they going to be. You know, no one's going to want to just maintain the momentum. In some, they would like to, you know, raise the bar and increase the momentum. But the more you'd like to monitor them as well, so that they are abreast at whatever level of participation. So, sorry to be elaborate, it's just that I feel strongly that in this instance, you know, the information sharing should be quite unique, you know, and refenced. How far have you gone in grappling with that? The whole SIP team, has that been raised somehow? Thank you.
Sure, thanks. I think in my bridges, I misunderstood the question. I thought it was to do with the question on funding for the entities itself. What I can say, Chair, if you have a line function department, a reduction in a row, and you motivate and register and report on your projects in line with the requirements, there's a good chance that you will get more funding if it's in line with ESIPs. For instance, on INAP, we did motivate and come up with a plan, and for that reason, through PICC, they requested that National Treasury need to give us more money for an application, and we got 420 million rands more this financial year because of this. We worked through these structures, and we could, on a regular basis, report and motivate where we can use it, what format we can use it, and we had a plan. So yes, it does. And there was agreement with the PICC that's important. If you want to raise this, stop electricity. So change that. Does the funds are flowing and to specific programs. On the information sharing, so yes, definitely, I will say that today. I know that PICC is working on a system where the PICC members will have access to a certain dashboards that I can update it on a literally daily basis. How far that is, we don't know. And hence my comment earlier that I would recommend very strongly that should that you invite the PICC Secretariat to come and make an overall presentation on how it's been shared, how it's been done. Because as we're not the Secretariat itself, but I think it's important issues that I can share with you that at this point in time I'm certain to talk on their behalf because I don't have the mandate on that. Thank you.
Okay, let's take it towards the end. It will sound rather small specific, but it's just curiosity as well. You know, the skills requirements I was referring to wasn't necessarily the general skills, but internally. As you go around in these various seats, what's your sense? are you going to have people who will be sort of permanently deployed to these different seats? And what kind of skills would they require? Would they go there with just their own skills? I have one skill in mind, project management skills. Deliberately, you would understand why. Should it be that one or a combination? But it's more inward looking. I'm asking is, you know, trying to sense the extent to which you would like to qualitatively participate in the various 13 seats and 13 complexes, obviously, for that matter. How are you preparing, or have you addressed that? It's an open-ended question.
It's a very good question, comment on the skills. I just talk from our departmental point of view. You know, it's a challenge, but on the other hand, it's also a huge opportunity. In what we're doing, and I want to just ask then Angelique to be more specific, but you need two types of specific skills. So one is project management skills, and then second, you need skilled people that technically understand what these infrastructure projects are about. And you don't have that normally in-house. And what you do is train people. That's what we do now. We busy training with our matching and placing and restructuring department. We then had the opportunity to identify certain individuals that just wanted to go into this direction. And they, when they arrived at this PMU unit, they didn't know anything about PSCC. And now they're leading some of the tips for us. It's because of internal training. It's one of the aspects that Angelique is also involved with. So yes, it's a challenge, but on the other hand, it's a huge opportunity because you expose, because your national departments is not normally being an employer where you will be trained in these types of skills, because you normally work in policy and so forth, not implementation of projects. And that's a skill we have to skill transfer that we're doing now at the national level within our department. I can't speak in terms of all other departments, definitely with us. It's a huge opportunity that we're grabbing. And it seems very popular. Everybody wants to be involved in this because of the, I think, the excitement and the fact that it's broad-based training that you get exposure.
Thanks. Just to add a little bit in sense that, yes, you do, in the beginning when the project starts off, you need a project manager there to understand where it's going and so forth. And currently what I do is I go to the meetings and I see, for instance, it requires the IRP to be involved, so I will chat to the IRP unit and take somebody with to the next meeting or ask for explanations or get them involved. But definitely, for instance, if one is taking off, there is a meeting every second week, and there's a construction, a quarterly meeting, and there, so once a week in a month, you actually have a meeting on SIP 1. So the intensity of these projects growing now, that is just one SIP. The others are going to get more and more involved in as they also flow. SIP 6 is going to take humongous effort from the department. So skills-wise, yes, it's a huge opportunity, but we are going to have to gear up very quickly with many more people to be able to deal, because you have to do one SIP. One project, you can't. Apparently, if I go to every single SIP meeting, I will never be in the office. So, you know, you try and you train them, but you've got to go with them for the first little bit to understand, to let them be. So it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. So you'll need one person to sit. So for the department, it's going to take a lot of strain, personnel-wise.
Well, thanks very much for that. Any other input on the members? But of course, rounding up, it's quite clear that the infrastructure build program is going to demand a lot from the department, and you definitely have to live up to the expectations. I really joke that no matter how much they try to raise the capital for the infrastructure, then they need energy to drive everything. So there is that strong pressure upon you. And we assume that NH will be not just a step ahead, but a couple of steps ahead, you know, in this matter. Because even the first truck and the grader and the bulldozer that goes into an area, it needs energy, you know.
and that has to be planned. At times, the demands would be different in various cities. And I really would like you to raise very strongly the idea of information sharing, either through a portal or whatever. You know, it's up to you to look into that. But as I say, amongst the motivating points is an L1 system, not only for you, but for anyone else, because, I mean, if I get into a back as a forward, I just push because I'm the ball to be on my team side, you know, until the scrum draft says, break. Job is done, you know, or you may find that you are pushing actually out of the line. You know, you need to get a referee, so the portal may help in different forms, you know. And of course, along the line, you know, those who want to invest also are keen to have a sense of what is happening, you know, not to depend just on articles from papers, you know, but it's for the government to see how much it shares in that. Other members, I'm sure, is of the PAC Secretariat, it's something we need to look into, but unfortunately, there's pressure now because we're tapering towards the end, and when you come back, we'll be looking into the budget review process, you know, getting all reports. It's quite ideal, but the practical side of it may not be that ideal. But it's just helpful to have a sense of what the whole infrastructure build is about and what our role is supposed to be. And I'm sure more and more is going to unfold both from the side of the executive and from our side as well. Thank you very much, Dr. Bernard and Ms. Killian, for now. Bye, thank you. Yeah. Let's move now to energy efficiency. The department will take us through.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, honorable members. My name is Tolly Lemabusela. I'll be doing the presentation. Next to me is Daniel Matisse. And we'll share the questions and the comments at the end of the presentation. Our presentation is focusing on the National Energy Efficiency Strategy, as well as the regulations that are associated with the strategy and standards, as well as talking more about the monitoring systems or the monitoring aspect of tracking the targets. So in that slide on page 2, it's the focus in terms of what our presentation would just provide background and context. We will talk about the overview of the National Energy Efficiency Strategy and then the objectives, and then at the end of the presentation we'll talk about the proposed National Energy Action Plan or the implementation plan that was developed, and then we'll then actually conclude. And the strategy was published in 2005 using the baseline of 2000 in terms of the energy consumption baseline. And then it is taken from the White Paper on Energy, as well as coming with the National Energy Efficiency Act, which actually came into promulgation in 2008. And then 2005, government committed to allocate resources to ensure that the National Energy Efficiency Strategy is implemented in a view of reducing the national energy intensity, the overall national energy intensity. But the focus in terms of the committed resource were to ensure that we have established system, we have legislation in place, we collect data in terms of the overall consumption as well as what we call activity level data, so that we can actually align with the integrated energy plan as well as the standards that are being developed nationally and internationally. And then the strategy, as I indicated, 2005 strategy, it was having a national, is still actually even now, an overall energy intensity reduction of a target of 12% using baselines of consumption of what we did. We used 2000 year and in terms of the energy consumption. And then we came up with a projected figure of 12% by 2015. But with a sector energy efficiency improvement target with four sectors, industry, combined with mining at 15%, the commercial and public building sector combined also at 15%. The focus also on the residential sector, the transport sector. There was also another sector that we focus on, which is the power sector, more especially the utility or the power generation. So as I indicated, the target was projected based on the assumed energy demand over the next 10 years since 2005 up until 2015, using a baseline of 2000 in terms of petajoules across all those sectors. As part of the implementation of that particular strategy in 2005, interventions were then implemented across all those various sectors, but specifically focusing on no-cost or low-cost with payback period or shorter periods that will actually make the high impact. And then, however, while we're doing that in 2005, implementing the strategy, we also developed several number of standards and legislation, of which we're going to talk about in the next slide of the presentation. As indicated, just to emphasize again, the strategy was to reduce energy intensity of the economy through energy efficiency. So it's just actually focused on energy efficiency, separating it from structural or other activities that actually reduce the intensity. In a view of enhancing energy security, also making a point that our companies in South Africa are competitive in terms of their own energy input cost, as well as focusing in terms of trying to decouple the growth in energy consumption from the GDP growth, and also improve, while we are improving global competitiveness, we also create jobs in terms of the various interventions that are actually implemented within the energy efficiency strategy. However, in 2012, before we actually review the strategy, what we did recently in 2012, we did a sort of a policy mapping just to actually align what is the national policies in a view of understanding the existing energy efficiency policies and regulatory framework, and also come up with the monitoring tool and action plans, of which that particular study in 2005 developed what we call the National Energy Efficiency Action Plan, which we normally refer to as the National Energy Efficiency Implementation Plan, with a view of when we're reviewing the strategy is to focus in terms of what elements should we actually focus on for the next 18 months or the next last round of the implementation of the strategy, as well as wrapping the first cycle of the strategy in 2015. However, in 2008, we tried to review the strategy in 2005 because it was never reviewed. But the focus in terms of the comments we received, there was a view that there is a need to do a radical alteration because there was no monitoring system. There was nothing in terms of aggressive, in terms of deciding what type of baselines to measure the impact and the improvement. However, although that was done in 2008, we took into confidence that in 2005, a national energy efficiency target monitoring methodology was developed. But however, when we reviewed in 2008, we realized that monitoring handbook still also needs to be reviewed, of which our focus now on the second review, which we did in 2011, parallel to the development of what we call the National Energy Efficiency Policy Mapping, was also to look in terms of what elements and scope of the 2011, because we couldn't complete the 2008 review because of the focus of clarity on certain definitions, definitions like sector baselines, because most of the individual sectors were not clear that the baseline used in the strategy of 2000 is not necessarily a company baseline, it's more the national energy consumption baseline of 2000. But sectors or companies have to develop their own baselines in order to monitor improvement at a sector or company level. But parallel to that, while we're reviewing the strategy, we also focus on engagement and discussion on the standards, because one of the things that was raised in 2008 and 2011 was the development of a measurement and verification standard, of which we call it SANS 2010, as well as the introduction of tax allowance or incentives, of which there's an income tax allowance under Section 12L of the income tax of energy savings to incentivize companies that are actually doing more in terms of improving energy efficiency. But of course, also important was the introduction of the national of the energy management system or standard, which is SANS 50001 in terms of the South African Bureau of Standard Terminals. So that strategy in 2011 has just been completed. It was made up of, it was published last year in November, and that the comments early this year on the 30th of January 2013 in terms of those elements that were needed to review. And then based on those comments, more than 30 comments were then received. And the forecast now of the action plan was to try to address the use of that 2008. But you should recall, Chair, that we're saying that the strategy is ending in 2015 in terms of its life cycle. So it was to re-emphasize that 2000 baselines are sort of a benchmark for us to actually measure the progress since that particular year. And then also to look at the fact that the targets, as they sit in the strategy, are not necessarily monetary, they are more aspirational targets. And secondly, in terms of the definition of energy efficiency, more especially in relation to mining, because mining, we're having a view, mining sector, that the deeper they mine, the more they become more energy intensive. And also trying to integrate some of the procurement that various sectors are doing in terms of green procurement, but while at the same time focusing on skills development in terms of ensuring that energy services companies are developed and supported in terms of ensuring that whatever we do in implementing the strategy at various sector levels, there are enough skills and resources to ensure that the energy savings are actually measured and the energy management systems actually developed. And also to focus around funding mechanism on various sector interventions. Those were the various comments that we actually received, of which those particular comments are being addressed now. And they were addressed in terms of the public consultation sessions. And then this particular strategy now is going to be tabled to cabinet for approval. But the focus in terms of that table to cabinet is more now focusing on post-2015 targets in terms of saying this is how far we've progressed since 2005, and then these are the new interventions and targets post-2015. So I highlighted that though we did a review of the strategy in 2011, but the focus was not necessarily to change the targets. As the targets are still valid up until 2015, it's now to actually focus more on developing new energy savings potentials post-2015. But of important in terms of that is to ensure that we have adjusted what we call adjusted baselines, because the baseline that were there at 2000, and then now by the end of December 2014, we should have new targets post up until 2030. So however, while we are doing that, we are now implementing what we call the National Energy Efficiency Implementation Plan, or we normally refer to it as an action plan using the international terminology. And then one of the actions, or the biggest element in terms of that, is to finalize our energy efficiency monitoring system, which we have just started in 2011. We're going to produce the first report to actually project how much have we actually improved since 2005 using baseline of 2000 by next year, March 2014. And then we'll also focus in terms of what we call energy management at various sectors, and also including the public sector and other sectors that were part of the 2005 strategy. And then while the monitoring system is also having an element of measurement investigations of the past energy savings, it will also focus in terms of determining future targets so that we can actually have a focus in terms of what interventions, while we are also introducing what we call the energy efficiency incentive schemes. I think that Zanit is actually going to talk about. So in a nutshell, the chair, in terms of that slide 12, is what we call the implementation plan. But the focus, what we did in 2012 in terms of coming up with that pitch, was now to start becoming more focused in terms of those five sectors to ensure that the last part of this particular presentation is to actually understand what are the energy efficiency trends since 2000 up until 2015 of a specific sector, as we actually indicated, in a view of coming up with what we call both a top-down approach of checking the assessment of the improvement, as well as the bottom-up approach in terms of moving from progress or process all the way up to progress. So in 2005, these were the main focus of the interventions. If you come from below, the baseline or the fundamental base in terms of the interventions were policies, institutional arrangement, standards and regulations, but specifically on programs is awareness campaigns, the program that we have with municipalities in terms of energy efficiency program in municipalities, the public and commercial buildings, the solar lighting program, as well as the industrial energy efficiency improvement projects that we're actually implementing together with Business Unit South Africa, as well as the National Energy Efficiency Leadership Network. So the focus was around all of those, and then you can see this particular slide is actually moving from bottom up with the view of actually quantifying in each of these various programs what is the level of improvement, because they are coming from programs, but within the monitoring system is more of a top-down approach that I'll actually show in the next slides. And then the monitoring system, as I indicated, is also something that we're working with the South African National South African local government associations, because it's a more focusing on supporting municipalities to developing their own strategies in a view of collating data that would then actually feed to the monitoring system. But the specific objective of these monitoring systems are, one, to ensure that we have an effective monitoring system since the inception of the 2005 strategy, so that early next year or late towards the end of the last year of the strategy, we can pronounce the level of improvement of 10% as well as across sectoral subsectors. And also to ensure that we track the developmental state of energy efficiency, to also identify drivers and responses post-2015, and also monitor progress in terms of achieving our targets and goals, and also try to actually inform what type of energy efficiency policies, finances, and regulations or plans that are actually required as we actually move towards 2030 in terms of the improvement of energy efficiency. So in a nutshell, in terms of the monitoring systems, as compared to that slide, the other slide on 13, it's a top-down approach as compared to slide 13, which was actually a bottom-up approach, which is now focusing purely on the 12% improvement, looking at the overall consumption now, and then try to actually decompose it further down in terms of sector level, sub-sector level, company level. But with a specific focus, you can see here, there are three things that will actually make reduction in energy consumption in terms of overall. It either changes in terms of the activity or structural, but our focus is more what is the contribution of energy efficiency in terms of the overall reduction in energy intensity of the country. And then we're actually going down. We're hoping that this one will actually be supported by what we call a bottom-up approach, where we're currently developing some sort of consumption declines, checking what companies have actually done in the past. So just this slide is just to highlight that with the residential sector, we conduct what we call surveys, households energy surveys, just to check what type of energy efficiency technologies are implemented, what type of behavioral change is actually within these residential sectors. And then we collect that into a database, the same with the public sector, where we've actually just completed 40 buildings in the public sector. We're focusing to run about 300 buildings now in terms of determining consumption up until the end of December, with a view of actually expanding that particular base to 1,000 by next year. And then around the regulations, Chair, I indicated that one of the standards that was introduced during the implementation of the strategy was a new build energy efficiency, which is actually incorporated in the building standards, which we normally refer to as SANS, not 10400XA, based on W4, which is not supposed to be there, as well as SANS 50001, which is more focusing on energy management systems, as well as 50010. Those are critical standards which are then being converted into what we call minimum energy performance specifications for those particular sectors or subsectors. So the SANS 50010, as I indicated, it enables industries or sectors to accurately quantify what their energy savings are, to also provide constant feedback in terms of at what level is their performance, and also to allow companies to do what we call continuous energy monitoring improvement. And it will also benefit companies when they're actually claiming for income tax allowance for energy savings under 12N, which is actually going to be managed by SANED, the South African National Energy Development Institute. While the energy management standard is critical for us to ensure that companies or sectors are having plans in place to conduct energy review and establish their own baselines, as well as their own indicators, and also do what we call continuous implementation and improvement of their own internal targets, and also monitor and measure using SANS 50010 in terms of their own performance as they actually implement some of these energy efficiency technologies. And then the income tax allowance on energy savings, it has just been completed. I think we're hoping that by the 1st of November it's going to be promulgated, that the feedback that we got from the Minister of Finance. So although there was also another tax incentives, but which was a point system under 12I, but 12L is specifically to incentivize energy efficiency savings with the view of actually coming up with energy management plans, check improvement, and also do measurement verifications. I indicated that while we're doing all these standards, standards are normally sitting at subs, but for them to be more effective, we normally convert them into regulations, but what we normally call them as minimum energy performance specifications, either for households or for buildings or for a particular sector. but we're also conceptualizing a concept around making now it mandatory for companies to support the income tax to ensure that the companies or sectors provide us with what we call energy management plans, so that we can actually be able to actually quantify from a bottom-up approach annually as we move towards post-2015. So that each and every year as post-2015, we can actually be able to say this factor, this is the improvement, or this is the percentage in terms of the improvement. I think the conclusion, Chair, I think the PC, the Portfolio Committee of Energy should actually just take note of the fact that we have reviewed the strategy, 2005. We are also planning to actually have post-2015 energy efficiency targets as we are concluding the first cycle of the 2005 strategy by March 2015. We developed a number of standards and minimum energy performance, which we normally refer to them as regulations on energy efficiency. We are also in the process and looking forward to implement the tax allowance or the income tax allowance as it's going to be promulgated before the end of this year, managed by SANEDI, and then also to take note of our development in terms of the energy efficiency monitoring systems that will then actually focus on revising the 2000 baselines. We'll actually come up now with 2014 baselines, which will be adjusted from 2000. And also the progress that we actually I repeating again in terms of establishing post-2015 national energy efficiency strategy, which will actually then actually have its own specific targets as well as measures. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Sela. Members, I think it would be good to get Sanit as well so that you can respond and engage. Welcome, Sanit.
Chen, good morning, honourable members and colleagues. Thank you once again for the opportunity just to share with you the development on the SANEDI side in relation to what Mr. Mabuzel has just presented in terms of the energy efficiency strategy, and following a thorough analysis, what we've done in terms of all the activities that are happening, how we see SANEDI's role evolving into contributing to making energy efficiency a success in South Africa. So just by way of introduction, SANEDI, the Energy Efficiency Division of SANEDI, is by no way a totally new entrant in the market, but in its current form in terms of the Energy Act, this division has only been in operation since 2012. The predecessor was the National Energy Efficiency Agency, housed within the Central Energy Fund, or CEF as it's known now. But in its current format in terms of the Act, with a clear mandate, and a legislative mandate has only been in place since 2012. And this has given us an opportunity to look back at what has happened over the crisis period, 2008, before that, also looking at taking a snapshot of what is anticipated going forward, and try and evaluate the pros and cons of the current industry in terms of energy efficiency, linking it to the National Energy Efficiency Strategy, the previous one, and the one that's now up for review, and making some recommendations after meeting with senior officials at the Department of Energy as well in terms of what role SANEDI should be playing in this particular industry. So leading up to this, there's been various opinions raised as to what role SANEDI as a state-owned entity, as an agency of the Department of Energy, should be playing in this pretty fragmented market that is referred to as energy efficiency in South Africa. The mandate is quite clear, but the interpretations of some of the points in the mandate are open for interpretation. So we've had conflicting views such as what was announced after the last MIPD announcements in terms of the tariff increase. We also felt that SANEDI should be playing a bigger role in implementing energy efficiency. The DA quite correctly feel that there might be some conflicts of interest in terms of what we're doing in terms of the monitoring and verification and assessment of the performance against the energy efficiency strategy, and this is all leading to a lot of I wouldn't call it confusion, but probably a lot of duplication, even in fields of awareness creation. We've mentioned at a previous meeting We've seen lots of awareness campaigns. We've seen national campaigns. We've seen the Weather Bureau. We've seen 49M. We've seen Power Alert. We've seen Eskom with the Giza Man. We see the City of Cape Town doing good advertising. Everyone doing good advertising their own right. But Mr. or Mrs. Smith as a consumer gets bombarded with all these messages, not necessarily consistent, and it ends up with a bit of confusion. And we get regular calls as to, should we install, actually when we signed in this morning at security, the guy asked us, must I install a solar? He said, you guys are involved in energy. We said, yes. And he said, and he's got a strong security guy there. He said, yes. And he said, must I install a solar heat or a heat pump? And that came out of the blue as he saw our names and we said, you know, we're coming to the venue. And that's happening all over the show. Should you install a compact fluorescent lamp or should you install an LED? So one day you'll see one authority promoting LEDs and the next day you see Eskom knocking on your door giving you a free CFL. The same with heat pumps and solar water heaters. So although we work in this environment, we understand the pros and cons and we understand where it's coming from, the average public, member of the public, is getting confused with all the messaging. And unfortunately, there's no central repository or a entity that's measuring what is the true impact of all the work that we're doing. Each one is measuring and verifying their performance in relation to their own specific, particularly funders in this case, but it's not necessarily being aggregated into a national picture. So we took a step back and we asked ourselves, and in consultation with the Department of Energy, what role would Sir Neri make the most effective and efficient contribution to energy efficiency in the country, whilst at the same time delivering on the mandate in terms of the National Energy Act. So just in our broad assumption, we came up with this sort of picture, and I'll refer to it a bit later in the presentation, the conclusion, that this whole area, as I said, is very, very busy, very fragmented due to the current situation that we find ourselves in terms of supply and demand. And we came to a brainstorming session that we said we should focus on the information and knowledge collection and analysis and then sharing that information to the people that are intricately involved in working in this space. So in terms of the actual strategy,
we look at how we're going to stick around in this busy program a little bit.
I've got exactly the time slide in the conclusion. This was just a snapshot, and then I'll go into the detail how we got to this, and then I'll revert back to that. This is a slide where we looked at National Energy Efficiency Strategy. We looked at all the different things that are playing a role, and some other said I referred to some of them, the market barriers in terms of access to finance, in terms of tax incentives, the tools and measures that are available. We looked at different roles that potentially could play a significant contribution to making energy efficiency a success story in South Africa. So just to do this, we sat back and we looked at done a landscape analysis of who all from a, if you look at the white block above, from a governance regulatory point of view, who all are playing a role in energy efficiency right now in the country. The grey area at the bottom is who's involved in the actual implementation of these regulations and or legislation. So if you look at the top, we have SOLGA, who's doing a lot of good work in the municipal environment. We have the Department of Environmental Affairs. We have the National Flagship Projects, of which the majority are energy efficiency. And we heard Dr. Bonnard this morning, out of all the SIP projects, you know, about 80% of them all have an energy component to it. So here has everything they aim to achieve is usually achieved through energy and energy efficiency, which has a carbon impact. Public enterprises through Eskom and some of the state-owned entities like Transnet and Prasa have been really good work in terms of energy efficiency on their own. And then you have Eskom obviously through the Department of Public Enterprises doing their IDM program, the SM program. I won't go into all of them, the regulator playing a role there, Department of Energy right in the middle, which is core to what is happening in energy efficiency. And then you have the Department of Trade and Industry through their taxation incentives on industrial tax incentives, which include energy efficiency, science and technology playing a significant role. The Department of Transport is looking outside of the electricity environment. And last but definitely not least, Treasury. And then within those line departments, you have the Bureau of Standards, you have the National Regulator on Compulsory Standards, you have SUNAS, who are doing the quality assurance in terms of the people that are doing measurement and verification. And so the list goes on. Then further down, CSIR, the National Clean Air Production Center, IDC, SunRoll, and not to mention the Green Building Council and a couple of NGOs and a lot of people in this area. So we've mapped this up and looked at this whole landscape. And all of these people and departments and individuals or working towards achieving the targets in that orange bar at the bottom, as Mr. Mabusele just highlighted in his previous presentation, which are the key sectors in the National Energy Efficiency Strategy in these particular areas. And each one of them are operating in different areas. For example, the National Clean Production Center, NCPC, they're focusing purely on industrial energy efficiency. They're not looking at residential, for example. Department of Transport looking at transport efficiency. So it's very, very fragmented, and there's no simple mechanism at the top that brings us all together. So if we just look at the mandate verbatim in terms of the Energy Act number 34/2008, Chapter 4, Clause 7 says, energy efficiency is a NEDI, to undertake energy efficiency measures as directed by the Minister, increase energy efficiency throughout the economy, increase the gross domestic product per unit energy consumed, and optimize the utilization of finite energy resources. And specifically, we're talking in South Africa's context as coal. And then we have to undertake energy research and development in energy efficiency, and we have presented on a few occasions the work that Professor Shah and his colleagues are doing at the Energy Efficiency Hub, which NEDI manages at the University of Pretoria. We are now saying that there are 131 graduates in terms of postgrads, masters and PhDs in energy efficiency right now. So that I think is firmly in place, and this is purely on the academic side, and we're providing the feedstock into the industry in terms of the skills needed to take this forward. But in terms of those four key points, if you read them, it is open to interpretation. It's very broad. It can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So we've taken each of those four points out of the Act, and we've just done an analysis. For example, the first one, undertake energy efficiency measures as directed by the Minister. What we've done in terms of the landscape, we just look at who are the role players involved in this particular area, who are doing energy efficiency. And we just included all the logos there, and it's pretty much what you saw in that line diagram, including a couple of others like BUSA, the French Development Bank, TIER Technology Innovation Agency, South African Association of ESCOs, and so on. And we analyzed each one of these, and we looked at the challenges and opportunities relating to each one of those bullet points in the Act. And the key area of view is that there's a lot of duplication. I'm not going to go into all the text there, the presentations, but it basically says, duplication, fragmentation is resulting in a suboptimal energy efficiency industry. If you combine, collaborated a lot closer in terms of actually just the funding, because each one of these entities are getting funding from some source, and we've got the GIZs and the KfWs and the AFDs, which are foreign donors. Each one needs to get funded. The National Business Initiative has just got a big grant now from the British High Commission to implement a program in conjunction with the Department of Energy. All these funds are managed independently and leading to duplication and fragmentation. The second point in terms of the Act was increased energy efficiency throughout the economy. Pretty much the same role players involved in terms of the logos. And what happens here in this particular scenario is that most notably the neglected areas relate to other non-electricity usage. The majority or virtually all of those people are involved in electricity per se, electricity efficiency, not necessarily energy efficiency. So we're losing the transport sector, and we're losing the people that probably need energy efficiency the most in terms of lower income households, which right now it's about tracing megawatts that can keep the lights on, and the megawatts come from the bulletins and the Sasols and the big mining houses, but these are people that are declaring profits that should be able to pay for their own energy efficiency, whereas the person living in the shack doesn't have the means to pay for it, but he can lease the foot to pay the current electricity bill. So because you're chasing megawatts, you're losing a lot of the social opportunities. And the opportunity there for Sinedi, if we went this particular, looked at this particularly, we can look at providing advisory service and trying to balance or create a level playing field and even a scrum, related to analogy, the previous presentations. The third one out of the four bullet points was increase the gross domestic product per unit energy consumed. And that's basically looking at energy intensity, not necessarily net energy saved, which we're doing right now, as I said, for the same reason, to keep the lights burning. And the energy intensity impact has been monitored through the EETMS, but it's at a very high level, it's at a top-down level, and it's not necessarily being really looked at from where do we get the best megawatts. Right now, we'll take a megawatt from anyone who's prepared to save a megawatt. And it might be in industries where we need not have those savings. It might need to be redirected to, I'm using an example, we might need to take the money available and focus it on the agricultural sector, because we need, in terms of food security, in terms of our competitiveness in the international markets, we need to maybe, and I'm saying hypothetically, maybe give the farmers more money for the farmers to become more energy efficient than to be giving money to BHP, Billiton or Sasol because they can really sustain their own resources. We don't know that. Right now we'll say we'll take a kilowatt hour or a megawatt hour from anyone who will give because we've got this national program. So there are challenges and opportunities related to that particular point there. And then the last one in terms of the four bullet points in the Act is to optimize the utilization of finite energy resources. And that, I think, is common sense, goes without saying. But due to the current circumstances and conditions, the electricity sector remains a primary focus. Given the current developments in the oil price, although we just heard that this month it will probably come down, we do believe that that requires more effort and more deliberation and a bit more planning in terms of what we can do in the other sectors. And we believe that the opportunity for Synergy in this particular area is education awareness and promotion of the necessary impact based on scientific and empirical research. So out of strategy, once again, is the three key areas that appear to be the barriers in terms of why we're not achieving the targets as have been set out initially. And it's the lack of awareness, the lack of capacity building demonstration projects, the cost associated with measurement and verification of these projects, typically a factor center of your total cost of the project, just to measure the project. And then, last but not least, is the perceived lack of coordination to create an enabling framework for people to operate on a level playing field when it comes to energy efficiency. So in terms of that analysis, we look at all the different tools and measures that are available and what are required in terms of a thorough and comprehensive energy efficiency program. And it looks right across the typical your project management cycle, the implementation, monitor, evaluate, and plan, but within that, you need the policy, legislation, then it filters down to the regulators, then you need the strategies, then you need the funding, and then the implementation and the measurement and verification. So it becomes a bit of a vicious circle, and on the sidelines you do have your R&D that needs to play a role. So this is just looking at it in a different format of how involved it is when talking about the implementation of energy efficiency. It's not just go out there and change light bulb, because that's not going to crack it if you want to do it properly. So from all this analysis, we've come up with a recommendation, and that the greatest opportunity for Synergy relate to positioning Synergy as the champion in the country, as we were asked to talk on this particular point. And that comes out of the landscape analysis, which I showed right in the beginning, and that involves awareness creation of benefits and opportunities, not necessarily going and doing it ourselves, but coordinating the national education awareness and all these activities that need to be brought together. Establishing and maintaining a single energy efficiency repository and knowledge base. We've seen now in the IT that's going out on road shows, very little actually, almost nothing mentioned in terms of energy efficiency, what energy efficiency contributions can make to reducing other investments in other expensive plants. So we've seen that is already a gap in the process, because we don't have the information in one point. The information is in Eskom, it's in the regulator, some's in the DAE, some's at the CNED, some's at the universities, so it's not really in a workable format. Then providing support and information, once again, to take responsibility of energy efficiency and knowledge management. I think we need a central repository of energy efficiency information across all sectors, not only electricity, all sectors, and all the different programs that are playing a role to be consolidated into a workable format. The third point is hosting a national measurement and verification function, which is then linked to compliance with the standard that Mr. Mambers referred to, SANS 50001, that everyone is measuring the impacts and the savings on the same basis and using the South African standard, because right now people are using different measures. Actually require you must use the standard, but some of the other programs are not using the standard. So you're getting some people can inflate their savings and some people might be doing themselves short. The same problem arises when you've got all these people doing these programs. There's a lot of overlap, a lot of double dipping. So someone might get a tax incentive, but they might have put an incentive from Eskom, and they might be getting support from the National Fuel Unit Production Centre through DTI. So each one of them reporting their savings at home in their own constituencies, and might not necessarily be as good as it looks, because there's the same savings that each one's been reported. So if you have a national repository or database, you can obliterate those duplications and make sure we get a true sense of what's happening. And then actively stimulate green energy industry through capacity building, skill development, and job creation. I think that goes without saying. Everything that we do has to have that component. And the same thing when it comes down to measuring and verification, we should be measuring the impact on energy efficiency, but how many jobs are we creating or how many jobs are we losing in the economy as a result of energy efficiency. In certain instances, you lose jobs on maintenance because you have now long-lasting, very efficient technologies that don't need to be replaced as often as inefficient technologies would be. But on the other hand, there's opportunities for reskilling, retraining to be focused towards an energy management or energy monitor or other areas that require the same level of skill, but they just change the focus from the current, just going around and doing the normal basic. So there are opportunities, but we don't know that. We have to measure these things. And then demonstration projects to actually prove what we're saying is fundamentally correct. It's not just textbook stuff. It's not stuff that we've taken off the internet and taken international best practices and just translated into South Africa. We have to actually do these projects in South Africa. So the evaluation of the respective role options that I've referred to gave consideration to a number of areas, and looking there more at the high-level stuff and support of the department, because we are an agency of the department, so we do believe that everything we do must feed back into the department, whose mandate is obviously policy development, that when policy development takes place, it can be done based on sound, true empirical research with true facts and figures to supplement the role that they are playing. It also overcomes the fact that we should not be a playing referee. We are more on the monitoring, the measurement, the verification, consolidation, reporting in a transparent manner, in an impartial manner, because we don't build power stations, we don't have any vested interest, that we can provide that role to industry. And by so doing, we can make a bigger contribution to the green industry through IPAP, the tax incentives, and all the other programs that have been referred to, including the strategic infrastructure projects. So, Chair, just out of that, we came up with the filter. We filtered it through. We saw there's three roles in terms of that definition, in terms of that scenario could be playing, or scenario could be playing a role. We should either be implementers or a clearinghouse, a central repository, or a hybrid of both the two. And we've analyzed each one of them, and I don't believe it's necessary to go through all the text on each one, but we've looked at each one.
Should
I go through it? On the implementation focus, the sole focus is implementing, including research, piloting and overseeing the administration implementation program. The problem there, the pros and cons in green at the bottom, is that we can contribute to the mandate. We can definitely make a difference and save energy. If we are the sole implementer, there shouldn't be a conflict. Someone else will do the measurement, verification, evaluation, reporting, data repository. But the problem there is that the resources that are required are quite large. And those resources, financial as well as technical skills, human capacity, all sits in other entities, right? So NEDI, in terms of energy efficiency, has a very small portfolio. There would have to be a huge transfer of skills as well as funding, and we don't foresee that could happen in the very short term, because although there was in the initial stages of IDM, or as it was known before, DSM, demand-side management, there were huge problems and there were huge delays, and we're talking about 5 years ago. I do believe that the Eskom DSM program has now really, really got itself together. It's doing excellent work now. They've got resources in every corner of the country, from the Eskom office in Kuruman to the office in Taos River to Buttered West to every corner of the country. So NEDI doesn't have that reach. So those are the potential negative points. And what we've done in terms of the delivery of on the mandate in the middle section, we've taken those particular points and we've just said, is this good or is this limited, the impact that we can really, really play in terms of making energy efficiency work in the country. And that's what our fundamental purpose is and our fundamental objective when we're evaluating these programs. So yes, undertaking energy efficiency measures as directed by the Minister, that would be good. But on all the other areas, we are probably limited in terms of our impact, purely due to logistics and due to the current circumstances, which is now really picking up speed and has gathered momentum. So that's just a bit more detail in terms of the energy efficiency strategy, the particular problems or the barriers that were identified there. And it's linked to the first point here where the delivery on the mandate would be good. We'd be able to overcome some barriers. Partially, independent evaluation, no, we wouldn't be able to do that because we'd be a role player. We cannot be the player and the rest. And to the next point, increase. We've got a green ring. We've done a typical robot type scoring here, green, yes, orange, maybe, and then red, not so good in terms of the scale. Zero, once again, the only one in this particular analysis is, once again, losing the opportunity of providing independent evaluation. in terms of championing energy efficiency statistics and performance in the country. So, option two that we looked at in terms of the apples that I showed is providing, and we've used the term clearinghouse, we might have to come up with a better word, but a clearinghouse is providing an integrator between the market and all those other role players who are involved, from your government level as well as your agencies that are operating and actually implementing this process, and providing a catalyst between the two, whilst at the same time remaining independent, impartial, able to deliver on our mandate and to provide a service, an uncomplicated service to the broader public out there by giving them information that would be unbiased. The delivery on the mandate, all of the points came out there pretty good. We looked at the benefits, we'll be able to fulfill a key national function which does not exist right now. A lot of the other areas we showed in the beginning are happening, or a bit fragmented, but there are a lot of people that are operating in the space. But we do believe we'll be able to fulfill a key national function that would really add value to the strategy and all the other initiatives that the department are undertaking. And it becomes a central national entity that hosts measurement verification for the good of the country. The risk, we have to align ourselves to the key stakeholders, because unfortunately when you have all these role players playing, you end up with personal domains. So to infiltrate, if I can use the word in inverted commas, the other people that are involved in these areas would take some really good networking, involving key stakeholders to share this information with us, because we do operate in silos and everyone's looking for their own accolades in terms of what they're achieving in terms of energy efficiency. But we do believe that that is possible. Technical skills and resource requirements, we believe we do have a lot of that sitting within the Energy Efficiency Hub, and they've already shown this expertise by developing an interactive, web-based, very secure online system for the energy efficiency tax incentives, which are being implemented right now. We evaluated that in looking at the criteria in the Energy Efficiency Strategy, which is the national roadmap for energy efficiency in the country, and you'll see most of the things in terms of effectiveness or contribution to the mandate would be pretty positive. We'll be able to deliver on the mandate. Implementation would be limited. Our implementation would be on the research side. We call it gateway process, because the idea is to, something new happens, like cool roofs, for example, we would go do the first one or two pilots, do all the measurements, do all the evaluation. Once we are confident that this is something that could work in South Africa, we then open the gates for the market to participate, and we stand back having proved the concept. So our implementation will be very limited to more R&D type role. And we believe in this particular option, we would be able to become an independent champion. Bearing in mind, you have champions, taking a boxing analogy, you have the heavyweights, lightweight, the mediumweight, you have champion in each category. We believe they are champions. We believe Eskom is the champion of implementation right now, but we do believe that we don't have a champion of bringing it all together and being able to provide a user. And all the other role players with a consolidated picture of what we are really achieving in terms of energy efficiency going forward. And this one was an all-around hybrid, looking at both, and we realized that we sort of swept it right from the beginning. We can't be the player and the ref, so we can't be the implementer and the catalyst. And so we done the analysis, it just doesn't come out, it doesn't click it, and so we put it in for sake of just completeness. But if you look at the options, the summary of the three options that we evaluated, the option two, clearinghouse, seems to come up in terms of the analysis and the discussions with the various stakeholders that we've had. That seems to be the way the Eneti should be positioning itself in terms of the champion in the energy efficiency space going forward. This would be an optimal contribution from Eneti, and we believe that hosting this function and the utilization of the correct clean data will enhance national energy efficiency delivery. We believe the knowledge management, which is existing in pockets but is not consolidated, will assist in providing industry with the required information, but also our principles, our political principles, and all other stakeholders in being able to share this information, be able to plan properly on where we should be focusing our efforts in terms of money, investment, and donor assistance. Energy efficiency champion responsible for the coordination. We've mentioned the problems we foresee with awareness, communication, education. We do also, even on the skills development, there are a lot of programs that are happening at the universities individually that are providing training courses, whether it's short courses. The University of Cape Town is doing it. Fort Hare is doing some very good work, more on the renewable energy side. Where are all these people? We need to track these people. Where are they going? Are they getting all the skills? Are they getting the bursaries? Are they getting the assistance? Are they staying in the energy field? Are they staying in the energy efficiency field? Or are they leaving the country? Or are they going into management? Or are they going into other fields? We need to track it so we can just see how we are progressing in terms of providing the correct skills, that we don't have problems with simple things like installation of solar wood heaters where just because of lack of training, things are falling apart and we can't find people because we don't track them. We don't have a database of where these people are going. So targeted implementation, that does unlock barriers. So people that are familiar and have the resources and have the reach geographically as well as technically and financially can go and do the implementation. We will not be the police. We will just be the independent verifier of what they're doing, that they are. And we realize, and people should realize, that not every single project is successful. And we need to be open and brutal about that. We don't have to just share good projects, which we typically do when we go to conferences. So we never go and tell people about the bad things and the things that really fall apart. And that is where the independent measurement and verification, not to criticize people, not to blacklist people, but just to give that can learn from lessons that we don't repeat those mistakes. We do believe that will unlock a lot of the barriers that we see right now. And facilitation and support, amongst others, the ESCO industry. We can facilitate. ESCO can come to us, an emerging ESCO, saying, I want to get involved in this space. Where do you go for training? Where do you go for the funding? Where do you go if there's a pocket of resources that you can bring into your company to do this work? Where are the potential projects available to the DAE's work with the Swiss and the Germans on the public buildings? So we provide that link and facilitate market facilitator in an independent manner, which we believe will also stimulate the industry. So, Jay, getting back to you, this picture. Our assessment suggests Sanedi is best positioned given the current market circumstances, the current conditions, to provide a clearinghouse function. That entails, in terms of this whole brainstorming exercise on the top left-hand corner, the housing of the National Measurement Verification Police, including all the work that's been done, and some of it we're already doing, like the tax incentives, as well as awareness campaigns, bank institutions that are investing in energy efficiency projects, what's happened to those projects. The bank just wants to know about getting their money back. They're not particularly interested in the megawatt that are being saved. We need to capture that. That's in our interest and the broader interest of the country. So both the housing measurement and verification function we believe is critical. Providing a knowledge management and energy efficiency data repository definitely doesn't exist in a consolidated form, and you'll see that coming out in the IP right now. An energy efficiency campaign in an important way that we can provide this assistance to both sides of the market in without compromising our integrity or our independence. Targeted implementation through showcase projects, or we call the gateway projects, where we need to test the concept, and we can do that with our R&D facilities, that we can prove the concept and create new innovation as opposed to just doing solar water heaters, heat pumps and light bulbs. The market is bigger than that. And then the facilitation of the ESCO market in South Africa, because at some point, the money that ESCOM is getting through the MIPD process has to dry up. It cannot be sustained forever. At some point, the price of electricity should be high enough to encourage people to become energy efficient without those real big incentives. And then you need a robust ESCO market that can go to a bank and get the funding to do a project like we see internationally is the case. I just rely on the handouts from ESCOM, which we and I are paying through our electricity tariff. We believe we can provide the support, knowledge, sharing, and promotion in that particular role. And that is how we sort of map what we foresee the role of Sanedi to be. It offers numerous benefits, corresponds very closely with the original functions foreseen for an energy agency in the white paper. It enables Sanedi to deliver on the mandate in terms of the Act, which I showed right in the beginning, in an effective and efficient manner without stepping on toes or without duplicating any activities and without wasting available resources, we believe. Leverages the contribution of other role players, that the people who are doing their particular areas best, let them continue with that and let us play a role in filling the gaps that don't exist. It offers an effective solution to addressing this whole problem of fragmentation and duplication. And we've even put the exploitation and independence of synergies. For some people, for their own particular reason, will not necessarily be totally independent in terms of sharing the information as it currently stands. And it presents an opportunity for a coherent and comprehensive approach to messaging, education, and aims achieving a huge shift in terms of what has to be achieved in terms of the national energy efficiency strategy for the country. But irrespective of that, Chair, we do believe that Sanedi would still require the resources, not as many as would be required to do implementation, but we would need a larger number of technical resources. We would need additional funding, and I'm very glad my colleagues from the DAE, their eyes are getting bigger and smiling. But with that, we do believe that it is possible. We do believe in a short space of time we can achieve this. We do believe that we will be able to make a significant contribution. We do believe that we will then be viewed as a national asset to the country in terms of energy efficiency implementation. With that, I'd like to thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for the opportunity once again to share our thoughts with you.
Thanks so much, Mr. Verenkar. That's such a breakneck speech. I really wanted to slow you down and welcome to Knesset. He's just behind you.
Yes, I'm just to answer the questions.
He was watching you, you know. How I wish senior officials from the department were around. Maybe the first question, before I allow the others, is that have you shared this with the department? Have you shared this with the department? Because it's not the first time we've asked the Department of Sanitation to come and make a presentation. And that should give a signal that it means we're not, previously we were not necessarily convinced that there's political will, you know. Surely we don't just make a repeat on something if we feel that there is some movement. Even if there's no movement, but if there are good attempts, you know, notwithstanding any lack of success. But this time, I'm supposed to ask Vafana Komdi. Because all of a sudden, you brought, you know, a completely different approach, you know, to energy efficiency vis-a-vis your role. I mean, maybe Sanet's role is important, you know. I suppose through interaction, we'll be able to see how it dovetails and integrates what comes from the department. Before I get more excited, let me allow the members to make comments as well and ask questions. Nobula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I don't know whether to start by commenting or starting by asking a question. Because really, here, you see all the people coming together. SALDA is there, DOE is there, they are all here. But the only thing that really bogs my mind is that there's a lot of complaints about skills, and yet at the same time, data collection is not there. People are getting trained. After that, my first question was going to be, where are those people going to when you were talking about the training? But then you answered that question by saying data collection. Those people are not known where they're going to. And our poor children are getting frustrated out there with all the training they have, with all the degrees they have, but they have got nothing to do. And every time there's a cry about young people cannot find jobs. Why can't they find jobs when they have gone through a tertiary education but not known? Why are they not known? As if it's a bogus schools which is not registered. The schools are registered, people are known. And people know who went through that education, through that training, but nothing is done. Then it comes to SALGA. SALGA, you spoke about the training and the awareness campaigns. We've got SALGA there also. People are crying, we see the places banning every time about service delivery. When SALGA is also amongst all of this, what are we doing? Why can't the people know down there when we do the campaigns? Where are we doing the campaigns? In towns? Where people have got everything?
You go out in the villages, you find the same cry of electricity and all the service delivery. Then the other one is about the CFL and the LEDs, which are being flooded here in South Africa. And at the same time, there's that cry that those things are dangerous. What are these things going to do to our continent or our country? That's the other one. When you spoke about, I think I have already touched the exploitation of people. This is really exploitation because, right, you are all together there, but it looks like the other one doesn't know what the other is doing, and yet you are together. I just want to know, don't you talk to each other when you are there, together there? I think, Chairperson, my last question was going to be, since that time up to now, you spoke about, I don't know, yeah, it's this one, progress. What progress have you done so far? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. But, unfortunately, you seem to have confirmed my suspicions about energy efficiency in South Africa. I think there is a lot being done, but it's been done despite kind of government and political will, not as a result of a thoroughly coordinated strategy that really pushes these issues along. And I think we have to change that. And, I mean, I'd be interested to know how many people are employed in this energy efficiency office, because I know in the last energy efficiency office, I think there were two people employed in it, which gave a sense of the kind of priority that we gave to energy efficiency in South Africa. And I think that has to drastically change. And I think the starting point for all of this is when I look at the IRP. Now, the IRP puts in 3,200 megawatts of energy efficiency over the next 20 years. But it is not based on any kind of scientific assessment of what is capable. And when I've looked at other IRPs, and particularly in some states in America, the way that they conduct the IRP is in fact to look at every single intervention that can be made, both on the demand side and the supply side. So they will in fact cost particular energy efficiency interventions, and those that are less cost than in fact building new energy generation, they will then fund through that particular IRP. Now, we have not done that in this IRP at all. And when I've questioned about that, they say, well, 3,200 megawatts, that's the kind of figure that we came up with. If we do more energy efficiency, that's great. That's not the approach we must take here. I think we need to have a new approach to energy efficiency in South Africa. So the first step is, of course, baselines, and I'm glad to see you put emphasis on that. And I'm interested to see where the CSIR's baseline study on buildings in South Africa and energy usage, because I know we did visit them last year, they were doing a great study on that, and I'm hoping that's going to feed into that particular baseline. So then we can come up with proper regulations to say that every new building that is built has to then be below a certain baseline in terms of energy efficiency. Then we can have a specific number that can then be inputted into the IRP. And I'm interested to see whether the work that's been done here will in fact form part of the update of the IRP that is currently going on, because I think that does need to happen. Certainly, I mean, the other issue, you bring up the issue around energy usage in low-income households and that. I think what we also urgently need, I know it kind of falls a bit out of the scope, but what we urgently need, we have been pushing for a number of years now, in fact, is household energy strategy. Because I think, as you rightly say, yes, the big energy demand in South Africa doesn't necessarily come from households. But what does come from households, though, is the peak demand. And if we're going to reduce the peak demand in South Africa, which is the thing that will ultimately trip us over into blackouts, then we have to look at the household energy bill. We need to look at how we change household energy usage, and that doesn't just require a change in light bulbs. It might also require energy switching over to gas or over to other energy usages. So I would say combine your work with the household energy strategy, and I would hope the Department of Energy, in fact, looks at developing that strategy finally, because we really need to look at how we use energy more efficiently and how we use the correct type of energy for particular household energy usages. So that's something to look at. But then also what I haven't heard you speak about as well is the issue around net metering and time of use meters. And this is an issue that keeps getting thrown around, and I hear it from different forums, and it's also a very uncoordinated kind of approach that we're taking towards it. NERSA seems to take the approach that, well, we allow it and so municipalities must just do it as they see fit. That's clearly not the approach that we need to take as a country. This has huge benefits to us. It can unlock a whole bunch of issues for us, such as decentralized energy generation at household level, all of those kinds of things. But we need a coordinated approach. And I know Sinedi has been looking at smart grid, has been looking at those issues. But we need you to identify what the institutional barriers are and the question of who pays for the installation of these meters. So I think that has to be a key focus as well. Then also on the solar water heaters, I mean, we had a bit of a discussion yesterday, and it was a bit depressing to hear, you know, that we're struggling with this, and we're struggling particularly with the transition from the money coming from the tariffs initially, and now in the latest MIPG, Eskom's not getting that money, DOE's got to get it and got it distributed out there. Clearly, we have to coordinate this properly. I mean, I am so shocked at the fact that in the midst of a major push for solar water heaters, in this country, we had a whole bunch of solar water heater companies actually facing bankruptcy. So we're losing our local manufacturing capacity rather than increasing it. This has to, this is a major, major market failure, and we have to address this kind of thing. I mean, the issue around this, and I think that's largely related to the fact that we haven't quite got it right yet with regards to the high pressure units, which is where our capacity for manufacturing really lies, and where the greatest capacity for energy efficiency lies as well. So we have to come with a coordinated approach around that. We have to find what the barriers are, whether it's financing, whether it's upfront payments, whatever. But I hope that you really focus on that particular issue, because that's a key winner for us if we can get that right. And then just on the skills basis, I mean, I know that the Department of Public Enterprises, when I was sitting on that committee about 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was, they actually came up with the plan to train about 10,000 artisans in the installation of solar water heaters. But that plan was never funded by National Treasury, or something happened with it. But clearly, we have to coordinate our skills pipeline with our objectives in this area. So I think that that's the key area that we're also going to have to look at, is what particular skills are needed. What can be driven? Let's cost all of this. Let's look at the kind of megawatt savings that can then be made, and then let's update the IRP according to those particular baselines. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You know, when I listen to both inputs, which I'm grateful for, one of the things one was keen to know, to what extent I don't know if the Senate tried to respond to that, was that, where are we now? If you think we have a 2005 strategy, one of the members, but the unfortunate thing is that the way the department is articulating is about what they are still planning to do. Can you see where my question comes from? I'm bound to ask, where are we now? How far have we gone in implementing 2005 commitment? Even said by 2015 we should have done an average of 12%. And the question is, how far are we from 12%? Are we 3%, 4%, 5%? Why? We need to be frank and brutal about those. You know, otherwise then we can just as much as well just have closed meeting. Go and apply to the speaker and organize a closed meeting, cut the public out and ramble on that. But if we're open then for the sake of making ourselves stronger. You know, that to me, that's very, very fundamental. And I must say to the department, please allow me to vent that frustration. But where are we now? You know, and why are we at that level? It's just like what I was saying yesterday. Was it yesterday, I think, yeah, at the workshop, Parliamentary Forum, which has been a parliamentary forum for donkey years. But we should ask ourselves, you know, the Southern African countries were the ones who were very united in towards liberation. But it's the other regions which are having, you know, more formidable regional parliaments than those who have a stronger bond, you know, amongst them. Why are we still lagging behind? I think it's the same question I want us to brutally ask ourselves. You know, the ambassador of South Korea was saying that they've got an open secret, that one of the things that makes them highly competitive is because they are doing their very good in reducing, you know, energy as an input cost. even gave me a book. I said, read. You see, it's an open secret, you know. So that's why you find us repeated coming back and say, please convince us. Let me run through a few specific questions that both of the department and Sanit. The first one is that there's an under and spend of 21 million in the past financial year on the EEDSM program. Why and are there any measures that have been done to rectify that problem? Number two, the research and development side. It would be nice if Sanet can just share beyond Professor Shah in UP, what other projects are being coordinated. When is the National Energy Efficiency Strategy going to be presented to the Cabinet? You see, a lot of members, I'm asking the question because we've been consistently monitoring this and we've been consistently getting promises. Now the question is, when? Slide 13, Department of Energy, refers to update on energy efficiency interventions. You see, once again, this is one of the reasons what I was saying. Give us even if it's just a high-level report, because one would have been able to hear from you what interventions have you brought in. And also, what's your reporting system? I remember, I know in different forms and ways, we've taken some study talks on this. Yes, all over the show. You know, I mean, out of our 18 study talks and oversight visits since 2009, quite a number of them, we're looking into this area, either directly or indirectly. And that's why this thing of reporting comes into mind, you know. Maybe you should share with us if it's part of that problem of data management in South Africa. Because I remember even during the time of former Minister Peters, one of the things that came up that we have problems in data management was, I wouldn't necessarily separate this, but it's about collecting information, knowing whether it's about generation, supply, consumption. This just dovetails into that, you know. If you generate and consume, how much are we ensuring efficiency, you know, in that very, very journey? I mean, I can say a lot because, I mean, one picked up a lot of things with the CSIR role in the, what's it called, CNPC. Yeah. I always like to share this with everyone, which is why people should understand. You know, the government that told us that they went to one factory which had one session where there were 6 motors. And at any stage in time, there had to be 2 motors on standby. But the engineers studied the whole operation, and out of their studies, they ended up adding another motor on standby. So the 3 motors were still able to do the required output, but with 3 only. Now imagine if that could be replicated to just 40% of our industry in South Africa, the level of efficiency. But it's not just about the saving. It's also about changing the mindset, you know, of that individual, which is one of the things I am very, very unclear about. That how much of that is coming in? The State Department, you talk much about systems, strategy, monitoring, all technical things. But at the end of the day, it's about changing this. In fact, I think energy efficiency, including changing human behavior,
through persuasion, or what I would call soft socialization. You know, when I paid BHP Billiton a visit at Nairton, just during constituency period, as when the acting, I began to realize that the way BHP Billiton is re-socializing its staff to be energy efficient was either already doing that or had the potential to take the very same worker at the workplace to become more, to become energy efficient where at home. This is what one would like to see coming out strongly in the strategy and in the program. It's fine to have your regulation, ISO and all of that, funds and all those standards, but somebody must have the political will to implement them. The municipalities are a very good example where there is such a dilemma and debacle. Because once you look at the municipality's role and the propensity, you find a different environment. They are scared, they are anxious, they are uneasy, they are this and that, but it's only through persuasion that they can realize that actually by being energy efficient, they'll be the winners. Please take us through, but I'm open. I don't see that coming through. You know, among other things, if I look at what I've noted, is that when you articulate your monitoring system, this assumes that the energy and efficiency programs are effectively implemented with some level of success. But then, you don't even spend a few seconds just to say to us, this is the extent to which things have gone through. You need to help us there. We're not starting energy efficiency from the 2011 document. We're starting energy efficiency from 2005. I'm sorry, things that's why you had to shift NDEA from SAF to SANEDI. So it would be helpful to be upfront and just be open that this is what we tried to do, but it didn't work. This is what we tried to do, partially succeeded. You see, one other thing which combines the department and SANEDI's inputs is the impact of awareness campaign. You know, in the past, I don't know if it was this year or last year, on a probably. Remember when we got Public Works, we were not impressed by Public Works because Public Works is the custodian of state property, not even just government property, state property. And we're still insisting, and no, even if we're the full complement of members here, that we want to see government leading by example. You know, whether it's design stage or whether it's retrofitting, already the industry has done a lot, you know, block standards and a couple of other things, you know, in ensuring that. But who's our model? If not government, you know. Just this morning I was scripting something to the research and said, please, link up with Vodacom. Because every time I drive past Vodacom at Century City, the whole roof has got solar panels. I'd like them to share with us that, you know. I kept on forgetting, but because they're coming to an energy efficiency session today, I said, no, I'll remember it now, you know. But I would like to personally to see a couple of government departments, you know, champions that, you know, I think ESCOM, either they're planning or already done it, you know, in some of the covered parkings.
Yeah.
You see? And it's massive. Now imagine if that goes through the Transnet, I mean, to NS, you know, those are massive institutions. Even physically, it becomes, you know, an interesting sight, you know, for people to see who can follow that. To an extent, reference has been made to incentive regime, but that's another area that we're keen to know. Are incentives only tax-based? You see? Mr. President Kami shaking his head. That's a very good point. Why shouldn't you share with us and tell us? Is it that why one is feeling that have we adequately created a common understanding and vision on energy efficiency in South Africa? Do we know
what do as an ordinary citizen, what I benefit out of it? Do you know when I put my suit or overall and be in a workplace, what I benefit out of it? We talk about a global village, and you find how many countries are doing their best to be energy efficient. And you keep on, try my level best, your Honorable Ibrahim Patel and Minister Davis, sweating to try to be globally competitive. But in what way and to what extent are we trying to make that each and every individual is incrementally aware of that? After unions, strike season, it's fine. The strike season will be over. You go back to that very same worker and said, look, you want an increase? You know, one of the things you could do, be energy efficient. Now, department, or whether it's an NEDI, tell us, what's the state of affairs in that regard? As I say, I may be joking, crude joke, whatever, but once the strike season is over, the very same worker, up to the last one, must be energy efficient. And they can have a better position to demand that you want higher wage because we've ensured that the company is energy efficient. I mean, just the basics of energy saving without even introducing new technology. By the time the designers, engineers, and whatever the company high up are introducing that, even if it's a couple of kilowatts, that's a signal. Because as I say, please, engage with me. I maintain, fundamentally, it's about changing the human behavior, whether socially or economically and whatever, which is why I feel, to me, energy efficiency should be as comprehensive as possible. Because if through government programs and civil society, you change the behavior of a resident, that resident wakes up in the morning, goes and work, and if you have won the heart and mind, that's an energy-efficient worker at the workplace. One leave a heater on, one leave a computer on, switch off the light, that sort of thing. So by the time your sons and other things kick in, your enforcement side, your nurses coming in, you would have had someone who's more responsive. Now, I'm challenging you. I hope you strategy will tackle things, unless you see it differently, which is why I was saying I wish your seniors, they would have been here. Maybe we should even brainstorm how do we take this forward from now. I know the we're all fighting to get back to this planet. Survival comes in, unfortunately, and that's life. I'm looking at Swanedi's input, and they made reference of the risk of multiple interpretation, conflict of interest. And I'm provoking the role of NERF. I've heard it. They're stretching it to explore the role of NERF in this. I know there's supposed to be mandatory reporting, an idea that was published somewhere, and we need to see whether that would be one of the things. In your landscape analysis, much as I appreciate, Sanit, that you've done a brilliant job to show the national governance, map. But nicely, let me say, it's not a comprehensive and a full picture if you do not put in the civil society component, organized civil society, how they would come in. And I'm emphasizing on that by saying that, an energy-efficient resident becomes an energy-efficient worker, properly resocialized and motivated and mobilized. I'm just running through my notes which I scribbled here. Well, of course, it's worth noting, appreciating, and highly appreciating your options, because if I was joking, said, because you've taken us to a higher step, and I hope you've taken the department to a higher step to think and apply its mind, And please believe me, this is my position, all of them. It's not about sanity per se. It's about the most appropriate tool that we need to have to drive
energy efficiency and the campaign. Sorry, you know where I come from, why I like the term campaign. Programs and technical monitoring and systems become part of the campaign. Never mind. But the main thing is that if appreciated and agreed to the analysis that's done by Sonet, as they say, here are the options, I really would be strongly recommending that how the department should be responding if they haven't. That's why my first question is, has this been taken to the department? What has been the department's response to this? Because Sonet has never presented itself. I mean, how many times have you presented this whole new time? It will split you, you're restructuring, you're still on your own, and all of that, you know. If they have done this at pregnant speed, you may need to go through it again, but just at face value, within this few minutes, you've given us zero better ammunition to better understand, not only Sonet, one of Sonet, the strategic function, but possibly a refined tool to drive energy efficiency. I want to emphasize that one of the members, but at times people tend to say people want to survive, they want to get better paths. So take away sanity, let's talk about the tools. You know, it would be disaster for that matter or any other need, but we think it is an appropriate tool to drive energy efficiency. Of course, if we have a common understanding and vision on energy efficiency. Now, Sonetti, you make reference in your option to as a clearinghouse that it has to fulfill a key national function. But maybe it links up with just my question, because what I came up with is that is there a national view on this? Yes or no, or partially? And how far are we in ensuring that, in galvanizing that national view? Knowledge management, wonderful. But other members, you know, when we went to Saint-Gobain has even got energy efficient managers. I asked, I don't know what other company, they don't call them energy efficiency practitioners or whatever term, or technicians. But I think that belittling. They said they do the same thing. They give them other names, just about job description. But then take a few steps back. If they're able to, in fact, they were saying that they take them to training sessions. They link up with overseas. I mean, Saint-Gobain is a French company, so they've got international access to their things, you know. And they were training them on energy-specific areas. It could be a hybrid with other training. Now, I'm taking a few steps back or standing up. I said, look, what are our IFT colleges doing for our technicians? Either as a standalone module or as even coming up with energy efficiency specialists. Of course, it goes back to at what level and what way do we rate the fundamental significance of energy. Of course, I've done enough. Let's not run this out much, but the issue of energy efficiency champion. Immediately when Sanetti raised that, I said, what is the department's view on that? I wish every leader was here, and even the government's view for that matter. Because Sanetti has articulated how fragmented and uncoordinated these efforts are. So it's not just about asking the department per se, because we are vested with the mandate and competency and the duty of and addressing energy. It's the government as a whole. Public works is standing apart, but it claims, it takes up all the government property. And as you expect, say, 40% of energy is consumed by built environment. That's a lot. If you can do something to reduce consumption. With your apologies, I'm sure you can appreciate our passion on energy efficiency. In other situations, we're rather slim and economic with our questions and comments, but for today, apologies. But please, it's your turn now to respond.
Thanks, Chair. I'll answer some of the questions then.
and you run away from some stuff. Yeah. I think the first comment I just noted here, the first comment in terms of what Sanity presented as it has been shared with us. But my comment is just to reflect that since 2005 up until now, as we actually stand, the energy efficiency landscaping process has been in a voluntary process. But the building blocks, I think, that the department has actually put in place is only in 2010 where we actually came up with the standard for measurement verification. It's only in 2010, 5 years after the strategy, where we came up also with the with some of the standard and minimum energy performances, like the energy management plan. So I'm reflecting those, Chair, as a building block of the energy efficiency in terms of baseline determination, in terms of measurement verification, in terms of incentives. But what has been missing, I think, and Sanity has actually put it very correctly, the issue of taking the standard of the measurement and verification and implement it. Unfortunately, it has never been done before since 2005 in terms of quantifying programs on the ground in terms of reflecting what the sectors have actually achieved. But I think Sanity now, I think as part of the mandate, they're actually reflecting that clearly as part of their mandate in terms of assisting the department in terms of our policy impacts, what is the impact of these policies and these standards, and actually going further to defining for us in terms of what has been actually achieved since 2005. And then for the first time, as from next year, Chair, there will also be the tax incentives, the incentives for energy efficiency, which now is actually building in terms of going towards a sort of shifting away from a voluntary mechanism for voluntary landscaping to a monetary. One of the things that we're also introducing as part of what we actually reflected, if I answer the question around skills development and the level where we are, is the issue that we've missed with the energy efficiency industry, which is a fact that since the introduction of the strategy, there has been misunderstanding of what is meant by a baseline. We've done a lot of work in the public sector between us and public works, but unfortunately we have never developed a baseline.
As long as they've interacted quite intensively with the intensive energy users group, because they were very critical of you in terms of how you've determined the baseline.
Yes, sir, that's what we're doing. That's what I'm trying to reflect, sir, because now we have established in 2011, the former minister, Mr. Peters, pronounced together with you, Chair, the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network. As we speak, we're actually going to approach around about 2,500 companies, small and large, to define the baseline, because there is a view in terms of our preliminary study in terms of energy efficiency monitoring system that we've actually extended the target of the industry and mining by 5% in terms of that improvement. But what we need to do, Chair, as moving forward, maybe in the next presentation, we just have to present the findings of the monitoring system at the program level or sub-sector level. Because we've done a lot in terms of collecting data as a baseline data, of which it has been a missing gap in terms of the particular process. We're also including SALCA. I think there was a question about SALCA awareness in terms of those dams. We ran with SALCA. I think we reflected that there is a 21 million rollover request by municipalities under the municipality EEDLM program. We work with SALCA in terms of that program, but unfortunately, out of 25 municipalities that were participating in that program in the last financial year, only 18 submitted a business plan before the budget adjustment, which was in October last year. And unfortunately, most of them, the balance of those, which is around about 7, which actually constitute to a more extent, that 21 million, could actually implement and utilize that money by the end of June. Hence, they actually requested a rollover. But in terms of that program, we've done a lot in terms of coming up with its own monitoring and evaluation tool at a program level, where we'll actually present in the next presentation when we talk about programs on the ground, with some statistics moving backward in terms of when we started in 2009 in terms of that program and coming up until now, because the fundamental aspect for us moving toward 2015 is at a program level, what we normally call it is the bottom-up approach together with our need to quantify what has been actually achieved now. But what we presented now was just the building blocks in terms of the National Energy Efficiency Strategy, what has been there. But we acknowledge what has been missing is the issue around knowledge sharing in terms of bragging. I think you mentioned Vodacom and the likes. Within the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network, we've done a lot of work there since the ACOP, the National Energy Efficiency Accord in 2005. There are some statistics that we can actually break upon. Within the public building sector, Currently, we work with public works around about 40 buildings. Unfortunately, when we visited those 40 buildings, we couldn't have access to the meters in those buildings. We couldn't actually have records. We couldn't actually even understand the square meterage of some of these buildings. Some of the buildings were actually not actually where we actually thought we were there. But what we have actually now come up with a program that we are going to do smart metering for 300 buildings, just to actually come to introduce what we call a smart metering program together with Sanity and a program that we are hoping that is going to actually give us some indication in terms of the performance, which we normally call it the energy performance certification in buildings. So in terms of this various level, we are working together with public works, within municipalities and residential sector, we are working with SALCA. But you also referred in terms of the, there was a question around the energy efficiency structure from the Department of Energy. We have now a new chief directorate on energy efficiency, although it's still based on the restructuring process of the energy efficiency. But I think where we're sitting is actually resourced as we actually speak. We don't actually have two, as actually was reflected in terms of employees. We have more than 7 employees working within that particular process. And also referring to IRP, 3,200 megawatts, that was EMR for the demand side management. I think, Chair, we should reflect the fact that and acknowledge one of the loopholes of the strategy since 2005 was the baseline determination. And then we have been saying in the strategy that the strategy is using 2,000 baselines, of which companies felt that the 2,000 baseline was company baseline. But this can actually have a scenario, Chair, that between 2000 and 2015, any improvement on energy efficiency by an individual or company will contribute to the 12% strategy, 12% reduction by 2015. So in other words, I can start now and define my own baselines and quantify my own energy savings. The 2000 baselines were purely in terms of demand, the consumption by that time. So it has been misinterpreted. I think we have corrected it now. What is in the IRP was also based on scenario-based approach. It was also not based on quantifiable measurement baselines. The CSIR, I think, have noted that. I think part of what we're doing with public works, I think we're going to incorporate as part of the energy performance certification those baseline determination. And then we've been mandated with energy efficiency. We work with energy planning in terms of the integrated energy plan in a view of informing the new IRP. I got a comment that is actually that those numbers on IRP will actually be updated as we actually define our own baseline actually moving forward. In terms of low-income households, the household's energy efficiency strategy, I think it's a forecast now, because in the current implementation plan, although the forecast up until March 2015 is focusing on defining baseline on households in terms of what is the technology being used, what is everything actually being used. But I think we'll consider a household energy efficiency strategy post-2015. But for now, I think we should actually acknowledge that our task now is to actually assess what has been achieved up until 2015. And then we adjust the baseline so that as we move post-2015, we develop new sector strategies and actually based on those new particular targets. On net metering, yes, but the focus for us is only on public buildings as well as municipalities. That's where we've been actually focusing. But within the department, together with Saneli, around net metering, we're also introducing smart metering in public buildings and smart metering in municipal infrastructure in terms of trying to actually capture the data.
I just appreciate also the balance. It's one thing to develop policy, which should be comprehensive. But it's another thing to mold a program out of that, which would be a little bit restricting given the box that the department has. I hope you appreciate Honorable Frayling's input in that context.
Yes.
You know, that we would love to see a comprehensive policy. We can start taking up issues in terms of the extent to which the program is responding to the policy. That's another, you know, kettle of fish. Okay, thank you.
Yes, thanks, Chair. On the solar water heating program, I think Dr. Panad will also add, but what we have done, I think it was raised yesterday, but what we have done within the department, we have issued a request for information and registration to solve the issues that were raised by the Honourable Member there in terms of trying to understand the market, because while we are actually introducing solar water heating technology from 2010, Department of Trade and Industry and Department of Trade and Industry as well as National Treasury introduced a local content threshold. So for the past few months now, we've been actually trying to actually find the balance in terms of the market sounding, who's producing what, so that we can actually provide some sort of incentives or a rebate in those that are actually producing it locally. So that process, I think, is going to actually solve that question in terms of that was actually raised, both in terms of the low pressure and also in terms of the high pressure. I'll leave the one of the skills development, but my point there is that the skills development within the energy efficiency, I think there's an opportunity now, because from the energy management system, there's an opportunity in terms of having those that will actually verify either energy auditors in terms of developing energy management plans or certified energy managers within the company or within a particular organization or measurement and verification professional. There's that opportunity. Apart focusing in terms of the energy services companies, the people who actually come and actually change lives and then. But that skills development program together with the South African National Accreditation System is also critical within the energy sector. There are various opportunities in terms of that particular process. In terms of the progress, 12%, unfortunately I don't have the statistics now in terms of the overall 12%, but what we have is the preliminary results of the industry mining in terms of our monitoring system. The pilot that we did showed an improvement of 25%, which was actually a data that was actually ending up until 2011. So I think as well as now we're in the second phase of developing that monitoring report, of which the final report in terms of the overall improvement of 12% is actually going to be visible. It's going to come out in April or March next year, March 2014 next year. So it's a critical task for us because it's also part of the outcome 10 reporting processes, because that particular national energy efficiency target is also reported at outcome 10 in terms of those particular processes. So it's one of the questions that has been asking, how far are we in terms of 12%? As now we went further down to sector level so that we can actually have an overall picture. But we'll actually come to and present in terms of those. But as I indicated, the barriers for having the fact that energy efficiency has been a voluntary process. No one was mandated to actually submit any data. It's only 2012 where the mandatory reporting of energy data was actually requested by the department. There were no incentives, there were no measurement and verification standards, but all those things are actually in place.
Can you share that information with us?
Sorry, Chair?
Is there a regulation?
Yes, Chair.
Can you share it with us?
Okay, Chair. No, we'll share, Chair, but there was a regulation that was published by the Department of Energy Planning in terms of mandatory provision of energy data.
Don't necessarily get those things. Don't assume
okay.
Get them.
Okay. No, we'll share with you, Chair. So, but one of the things that we're building on in terms of that regulation now on energy efficiency is to come up with what we call procedures. Because the regulation is actually just highlighting what type of data set must be submitted. So as part of this process on energy efficiency, now to actually stipulate to say, thou shalt report activity data, because the energy, the mandatory provision of data is the consumption of the overall buildings. But energy efficiency are more interested on what we call activity data. What is being consumed in this building in terms of light, in terms of HVAC, in terms of those. But we'll actually share that information. We'll also share with you, Chair, and the committee in terms of that annexa that is actually focusing on disaggregated data. And then slide 13, it was talking about EDSM interventions. I think I have noted, Chair, your comment. I think we just have to come back and present the program specifications in terms of how far in terms of that process. But noting that the measurement and verification in terms of the public building program is still actually there. But in terms of the industry, they've been very proactive in terms of appointing their own measurement and verification. I think let me give Sanity to respond there, then I'll actually come back in terms of those that I've actually missed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. With the question, the first one, has this revolutionary change been shared with the department? Chair, I think you'll be glad to know, following up last presentation to the committee instructed us to go back to the department and sit down and iron out all the issues and the problems in terms of the mandate. That was done very soon after the previous meeting. We met with senior management of the department. Dr. Barnard was there, Mr. Pana, Pani, Ms. Matakani, Mudisi, and myself. And we presented what we presented to you at that meeting and said our instruction was to go to the department. And their suggestion was exactly in line with this. Gove, there is a big problem in all the things that have been highlighted in terms of data access, a gap in the market, duplication, all the things. And they said, go back and do a study, but we want you to focus on moving towards a measurement and verification sector for South Africa. That's where they see our role. But we must do the study. We must do the analysis, which we've done, and that's just been finished now. So the actual results of the study are definitely in line with the instructions from the DOE, and which they share with us. But the actual presentation is hot off the press, but it will be shared. A Word document supporting this, which is more detailed, will be shared with the department in the next 2 weeks. The complaint, Honourable Chair, yes, about people getting qualifications but not necessarily having the skills to get involved in the energy industry. Yeah, is exactly 180 degrees from what we hear every day about not achieving the savings because we don't have the necessary skills. And the aim of tracking people and creating a once again, a national database will hopefully alleviate that. So people can see, and we'll be one to publish good news stories. Someone has just come out of tertiary education, I'm not necessarily tertiary education, someone might have just done a trick because from solar water installation, that you don't need to be a mechanical engineer. So right through the value chain, that we'll have where these people are, that people can see who have aspired, who have eventually become their own, for example, solar water manufacturer, and where they can match their skills and their competencies with the role players or the role models in this particular industry. And I do realize this is a problem. We're quite far down the line in terms of developing the database of all the training that's available. So if you happen to have a basic technical education and you want to get involved in measurement and verification to benefit from the tax incentives, we've got an idea of what training courses are available. And that must be published once we finalize it on an open platform on a web-based system. The next big development in that is to get these training courses and the different levels accredited by SAQA, South African Qualifications Authority, so that people can aspire towards a career in energy management or career in energy efficiency. Right now we have mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, artisans, electrical contractors who are all involved in this fragmented industry, but they're still builders and electrical contractors and mechanical engineers. We need to move towards where we have energy, as the Chair mentioned, of where St. Gallen has an energy manager, and that's a career to pursue, and what do you need to do to that, how many courses do you need to get, and that evolves in all the areas. So definitely something that we will take your input into consideration in making sure that we can marry the two, the unemployed with the actual skills that are required. The compact fluorescent lamps, which you mentioned, and the LED, a big problem, yes. Compact fluorescent lamps do have mercury in it, and mercury is a big problem. The national strategy, and it has been promulgated into a regulation from the Department of Trade and Industry on how compact fluorescent lamps must be disposed of, is in place. So really, people can be penalized, they can be fined if they just throw a compact fluorescent lamp into a rubbish. The problem with that is, it's not policed, and it's very difficult to track, to manage. So what's happening in the mass program, the compact fluorescent lamp is collected, and the new lamp is given. So they centralize, coordinate, and it's sent to a proper place to be disposed of. But it is still a problem that requires a lot of awareness. We believe the saving grace, so to speak, will be the transition to LEDs. The LEDs don't have a hazardous waste. We had the incandescents, they had nothing, and we had the compact fluorescent lamps, which is the major bulk now. It's got, each one's got a maximum of 5 milligrams of mercury, but now we've already seen the transition to LEDs, which don't have hazardous waste. But until then, we have to, the 50 million that we've already installed, we have to make sure they dispose of correctly. It is an international problem. We have been asked to participate tomorrow, actually, on an international webinar arranged by the World Bank, purely on lighting, but for the African continent. So they've got speakers from Egypt, Ghana, the whole North, West Africa, SADC, ourselves, and we sort of are hosting this webinar. And one of the key areas to address is how do you avoid dumping in Africa of inferior products, but as well as products that contain hazardous waste. So it is being addressed, but we've got a long way to go. The exploitation through too many role players involved without any sort of coordination is definitely happening, because also just the cross-pollination of the skills is moving around in the same subject. So people will move from the one area to that area, and then move from one area to, and you're not creating this environment to bring in new skills. So people just move around in the different all these different people that are playing. So you see today someone's working for this particular program, the next day they're working for this particular program. So it's not creating numbers, but it's actually just moving, spreading the load, and we still end up with the same gaps. So that will definitely be addressed. Honourable Rowling, you mentioned SANED and the energy efficiency component, the number of people. I'm glad to say we have improved from 2 people. We are in actual energy efficiency, and I want to see it in context, portfolio, we've got 5 permanent people. We do have 2 relatively full-time people from GIZ on a 3-year contract, both specialists in that area. We are on a whole drive in Sanedi to empower interns. We've just received a new tranche of interns from TER, Technology Innovation Agency. They give huge amounts of scholarships and bursaries, so many that they can't absorb these people themselves. So they've actually got a pool of very good, and I mean, we've just got the next tranche started with us on Friday. So within energy efficiency, we have 3 interns there as well. But I must say, the way Sanedi operates now, we operate in a matrix state. So within Sanedi, we have just under 50 people. So although the energy efficiency portfolio, in terms of an organogram, if I place an organogram, would be the 5 plus the 2 plus the interns, I have access to the full repository of resources within Sanedi. And we make use of them. Dr. Hitekamp, who's a specialist on coal, he gets involved and he's assisted the department of centers explaining how primary energy links to net energy savings and so on. So we operate as a team and we do have access. And then we do have the energy efficiency hub, which we make use of with a lot of our work, was we're funding these people, postgraduate studies, and we have that expertise. As I said, 131 graduates now come through that pipeline. The CSIR, on the work they're doing on the building standards, yes, very good work. They're going into the review now and we're assisting them. One of the big criticisms of the first building standards for energy efficiency, stands 204 and 10400XA, was the fact that some of the underlying premises were also based on not being able to get data. So if you look at the geographic climatic map, you see that Cape Town on that map has the same climatic region as Richards Bay in KwaZulu-Natal. We know we don't have to be climatologists to know you're looking outside the window now and looking outside the window in Richards Bay, we're not in the same climatic zone. And basically from the Northern Cape, right, the Free State, Gauteng is all the same climatic zone. And we know this is just not true. So it's being redone now, and the actual climatic map, we are assisting them with that through our contacts with the Weather Service and being funded by GIZ, the program that's in SAGEN program between ourselves. So that's been done. We're working very closely with the CSIR on making that happen. The one other area that what's not really happening is the building standards are in place. They're compulsory. If anyone builds a house above 100 square meters, you have to comply with the building regulations. But that is, once again, one of these areas with very good regulation, but it's not being policed, and we have to do measurement and verification in that area as well. So how much energy have we saved as a result of building new houses in the right way, as opposed to in the old way? So, but that is ongoing work. The metering is recovered. And then research and development, I'll say, is a coordination of other activities in terms of skills development. The energy efficiency and demand side management hub, which is funded by ESCOM, by SANEDI, through funding from both the DOE and the Department of Science and Technology. This is one of the areas where we have 2 streams of funding coming to SANEDI, which we put into the hub. The first 5 years of the hub is coming to an end now at the end of the financial year in March, and a review is currently underway of how the hub has performed and where are the gaps. We had the first progress review meeting on Monday afternoon at the Department of Science and Technology, where the consultants presented to us. They speak to all the role players throughout the country, and it looks like we're going to change reposition, that we don't only have at Pretoria University, which has done sterling work, but we're not engaging all other universities. So the recommendation so far is that we create a hub-and-spoke centre whether Pretoria University will be the hub, but the other universities, small and large, will become spokes, focusing on various areas. So you'll have one focusing on ventilation, other ones on heating, others on solar water heating, and that they'll all feed back into the central repository where we'll be able to coordinate the academic skills that are being tracked by the industry. So that was one of the key findings so far, is that this has to be expanded to other tertiary institutions. We can't just have a Pretoria University. Although it's a national centre, you've got to have a better geographic representation. So that is being addressed right now. You'll probably see the change in the beginning of the new financial year in April. We will bring in other universities to be able to track that. And then the incentive regime, Honourable Chair, is there are, and you made reference to the Energy Intensive User Group, they called a meeting a while back just to, with all the people that are providing incentives, just to understand where all these incentives fit in. So we have developed a map of the different incentives for the different activities. Some of large-scale projects, the 12-hour tax incentives, you've got to have an investment in energy efficient equipment of $200 million and above. So that's only for large ones. Then there's the standard product and the standard offer and the ESCO model and all the other ones. So I will share that with the Secretary, which shows at what stage do you apply for what incentive. Because the Energy Intensive User Group, and there you're sitting with some really clever people, said, we love incentives, but we just don't know where to start. Now, where do we get the best bang for our buck? Where do we apply for what? So that map has been developed, and I will share that with the Secretary. Regarding the common vision, I think we definitely get in there. I think there is a common vision, but how we get into a vision is still fragmented, and I think through this process we've discussed and the strategy, I think we'll definitely be able to address that. And the next time, I think you will see a more concerted effort to collaborating and working together. And then on this last one, the nurse's role in this area, the regulator, they still play a key role in the Eskom funded incentives. They approve the tariff, and within the tariff there is a portion of the tariff increase which is allowed to go back into energy efficiency and which goes through the Eskom program. So they regulate that, and they insist on a certain reporting format for that. It has to be done according to the national standard, which they were party to developing. The one problem that the department has picked up and has addressed in the last 2 weeks is that in terms of the developments and in terms of the tax incentives, to make sure that every kilowatt hour and every cent is properly accounted for, especially in the tax regime, that a requirement has been built into the regulation that SANAS, the South African National Accreditation System, has to accredit anyone goes and does the work in terms of measurement and verification. And Eskom has waived that requirement, and the department has addressed it to say, we have to create a level playing field. We need to have SANAS accredited specialists, practitioners across the board. So that is being ready. But right now, nurses, just in terms of the regulatory environment, outside of that, the tax incentives and all the other incentives that are being offered by donor agencies and the banks are not part of their work. And I have taken out in that in our landscape analysis, we will build in another layer of civil society, because I think they're the ultimate beneficiaries, not taking into consideration the climate and the national picture in terms of security of supply, but in terms of actually alleviating energy poverty, I think they're definitely a key role play, and we have taken out and I'll build it into that slide.
And the business component as well.
I think that was all, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you.
I'm just looking at time. Can you quickly round up if you still have a few things to respond to?
Okay, thank you, Chair. There's one more question, you know, that was posed to us, and that question, you know, is in relation, you know, to when are we planning to present, you know, the revised strategy to the cabinet. And to answer that one, from our side, you know, we are busy putting together a submission with the cabinet memo for minister's approval, and we are planning that by the end of October, at least to know where we should have submitted a revised document to cabinet.
Thank you very much. That's on record. Even if we'll be sweating ourselves on campaign work, but we won't forget that. Thank you very much. Maybe just rounding up, there are lots of things to say. It's so difficult. But I just hope we're a couple of steps ahead, and I'm glad that NERSA was here. I feel strongly that NERSA should up its role in this. The carrot and stick approach is very important. Incentives are required, but the stick will be there as well. you know, and that's why you're listening. You know, this guy is going to give the carrot, but your stick must grow bigger as well. You know, I'm sure he'll agree with me on the profiling, you know. Because at the end of the day, people will all sit and smile when we see the effects of energy efficiency. But one of the things that I just would like to round up with is that much as I appreciate that electricity is a major provider, but let's look at other energy sources as well. And Sanergy, I'm sure that's mainly on shoulders to guide the department or feed the department information so that its policy formulation, review and refinement, you know, is informed by your areas, liquid fuels and all the other stuff, you know. All can be efficient and whatever else. And also, let's look at the extent to which energy efficiency is integrated in the infrastructure built. We've just listened to Dr. Barnett here, you know. Why don't we go commercial and say to Treasury, for every buck you save in infrastructure built, must come to you, if they'll agree. But it could be a good idea to see how it works. You know, a little bit tricky and complex, but, you know, just to make sure that there's very strong energy efficient orientation in the infrastructure built, you know, all the way through, you know, and see. But to me, in Dutra, it's a starting point, because there are many players. Your Sanet is, you know, diagrams are very busy. To me, one of the members, the starting point is Department of Energy, is Sanet, is NERSA, is SALCA, is COCTA, NISA, CSIR, ESCOM, the camp within the government. Before you go out and fall in love and marry others, you know, make sure that the government camp is solid and public works. Because I'm always very passionate about that. Somebody must display, not that they wouldn't be benefiting. I mean, government departments are owing municipalities, you know, hell of a lot. And imagine if by ensuring that they really advance energy efficiency meaningfully, that's some saving, you know, because it's not going to run into a couple of hundreds of thousands. It runs into millions now once it's done appropriately. So I hope you'll keep that in mind, gentlemen. This is the starting point. By the time you go out and attract others, and you're already engaging with them, but make sure that there's a very solid base within. And please, on the other hand, let's make sure that we come to a conclusion that who exactly is the coordinating champion? There are many champions. That's fine. You may allow them, but there must be a coordinating champion. There must be a portal to which we go through. And as I say, not only on electricity, but on energy in its most comprehensive form. On that basis, honourable members, let me thank you and thank everyone for coming today. I sense that although this might be regarded as work in progress, but there is some advancement in terms of refining the concept, refining proposals, refining the strategy for the future. That's a call for us to be more motivated and smile a little bit more. Thank you very much, Badangi. The meeting stands adjourned. Who hate nuclear energy, I invite them to the energy stakeholders meeting at 5 o'clock, 8249. No other place other than 8249, because we want to be photographed by the cameras. Yes, tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Thank you.